93.3 WMMR, Audio on Demand, presents the Preston and Steve Show podcast.
We lost someone. The writer of a song you guys all know passed away. He was 87 years old. His name is Richard D. Trentledge. He was the guy who wrote the Oscar Mayer Wiener song.
Oh, wow.
Mm-hmm. I had to be one of the most, if not the most, one of the most successful advertising jingles of all time.
Yes. It has to be.
Yeah. Oh, I'd love to be an Oscar Mayer Wiener. That is what I truly like to be. Because if I were an Oscar Mayer Wiener, everyone would be in love with me.
Do you know what's interesting is that his musical passion was death metal.
Oh,
yeah.
But he was
great at the jingles.
Oh, actually, my mom used to sing it every time she would make us hot dogs. And it was like a way to hear our mom say wiener.
Well, there's an interesting story behind that. He told the details about that song in an interview. The jingle he wrote, I mean, he had the concept for and wrote it in about 1 hour.
And wiener.
He was done with it. It happened a late night in September of 1962. Late September
1962.
Damn, it's close.
63.
Writing songs about my hot dog, right?
No, but he was a career jingle writer, and he had a number of successful songs under his belt.
What else? Any note? Anything we'd recognize?
It just says that he did jingles for McDonald's, V8, and even the National Safety Council, which is a song for seatbelts. Now, I don't remember.
I wish I was a seatbelt in a car.
I don't remember the V8. I remember, you know, knocking yourself out. I could have had a V8. Yeah. Should have had a V8.
Oh, I wish I had a V8 when I had something else.
And I don't know what McDonald's jingles that he did, because there were several McDonald's jingles.
Guys who were successful at that. For example, Barry Manilow. Yep. You know, when you have a jingle that hits, you can be a multimillionaire just off of that.
He lived in Fox River Grove, Illinois. He played the banjo ukulele.
Oh.
And he submitted the Oscar Mayer Wiener song for an open contest that was held by the company. Now,
he wasn't working in the industry at that time?
No, he was. Okay. But he heard about this contest, and he had only learned about the contest the night before. He accepted the challenge and then changed his life in the process by doing this. Now, that night, he was scrambling around for ideas, and Trentledge remembered something that his son had spoken about. His son said that he wished he were a dirt bike hot dog, which apparently meant a cool kid back in the early 1960s America.
Yeah, a hot dog. You're a bit of a hot dog, aren't you? Uh-huh.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And so he wished he was a dirt bike hot dog.
Right. I wish he was a dirty, filthy whore.
Who's a dirty, filthy whore? You are. His son wanted to be cool, so he said, why not make the Oscar Mayer hot dogs cool in the same way? And that evolved into the aspirational, I wish I were an Oscar Mayer wiener line. So he said, the kid literally said, I wish I was a dirt bike hot dog. And he turned it into, I wish I were an Oscar Mayer wiener. And then quickly hammered onto the typewriter, and the rest was history after that.
Hey, Daddy, I helped you with your jingle, right? Shut up.
pairing,
you want Daddy to hit you again?
Pairing those lyrics with the soon-to-be-famous melody, Trentledge took his son, who was 11 at the time, and his daughter, who was 9, to record the song. And they didn't have to go far. He had a home studio in the basement. And so he had the kids sing it.
Do it again.
And then they submit.
Do it again. Come on. I'm hanging by a string here. Haven't you noticed we're not eating a lot lately? You notice Daddy drinking a lot? Now say it right.
Oh.
I told you there was a story behind this.
Oh, God. Oh, can't you get it right once? Who are you, Kathy Romano?
Yeah.
I'm dying in here.
They then submitted it to Oscar Mayer's headquarters in Wisconsin the very next day.
That was good, kids. That one was good.
Let's go get ice cream.
Hey, what are you recording?
Hang on. Let me go to Mark. Knows the seatbelt jingle. Hey, Mark, how you doing,
hey,
man?
Guys. Good morning. You guys rock.
Thanks, buddy. So you remember that?
Power, brother. Listen, I'm listening to the show. That seatbelt song, you'll know it. I'm not a singer, but check it out. Buckle up for safety. Buckle up. Remember that?
No. That actually, I do sort of remember that.
You got to give me more than that. Come on, Mark.
Dude, that's it. I can't do anymore, but that's it. I just thought.
All right. Buckle all right, thank up you. For,
yeah. Ken, okay, I think he's right.
Ken says he can sing right. Here. Let's go to him. Hey, Ken.
Hey, how are you doing?
Good. So you can sing that Buckle Up jingle?
I can go one more verse. I can go Buckle Up for Safety. Buckle Up. Buckle Up for Safety. Everybody buckle up.
Okay.
You don't remember that?
No, I don't.
It was an older commercial, but it ran for a while. I do remember it.
Okay. Well, he's the guy who wrote that.
How about that?
So he had an act for these things. Let's see. Here we go. Marissa pulled this up. Among the other memorable melodies and taglines, he wrote, McDonald's is your kind of place.
McDonald's is your kind of place. It's such a happy place. Hap, 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 happy place.
Oh.
All clean and semi. Yeah, something like McDonald's.
Okay. Well, then that would have been it. And for V8 was, wow, it sure doesn't taste like tomato juice.
The line is, wow, it sure doesn't taste like tomato juice. Please, kids, you're killing me.
Wait, it sure doesn't taste like tomato juice?
It sure, because it's not. It's more than tomato juice.
Can't do it, Mono. Get her out of the studio. She's completely tone deaf.
There are 8 vegetables and maybe even some fruit.
Okay.
In a V8.
Well, so, I mean,
but essentially it's tomato juice. Yeah.
What's that?
Tomatoes are fruit.
Yeah, well there you go. Nah. No, but if you taste V8 and tomato juice side by side,
different.
They definitely taste different. It sure doesn't taste like tomato juice.
Sure doesn't taste like tomato juice.
That's for sure.
Hang on. Anne has a recording of the Buckle Up for Safety commercial.
What?
Hi Anne, how you doing?
Well, how are you guys doing?
Good. So you have a recording of that?
All right. I found it on YouTube. But
oh, okay.
You know, I can take credit.
Okay. You going to play it for us?
Well, I am right now.
Oh, we have it.
Yeah, but I want to hear her version of it. Go ahead.
Buckle up for safety. Buckle up for safety. Always buckle up. Pull your seat belt snug. Give an extra tug. Buckle up for safety. Buckle up.
Buckle up for safety.
Ooh.
Buckle up.
All right,
it's a
duet.
Yeah.
All right. I love it.
Thanks, Ann. Appreciate it.
All right. You got to be an old timer to remember that, I guess.
It last for a while, though. I do remember it as being pretty popular.
It's in black and white.
Buckle up for safety. Buckle up. Buckle up for safety. Always buckle up.
And they're in Conestoga wagons.
Give an extra tug. Buckle up for safety. Buckle up.
Buckle up for safety. Buckle up.
That was pretty awesome.
Not pretty. Absolutely awesome.
I think that was the best performance of the Philadelphia Sound Machine today.
It was new member.
You know why.
Oh, yeah. Marissa's in here. Nick's out.
Yeah.
That's obviously what did it.
Nick is the dead weight in the sound machine.
No. Hang on. Harry knows that the version of the McDonald's jingle. Hey, Harry, good morning.
Hey, you guys rock.
Ah, thank you, Harry.
Hey, listen, Steve, there's a version when we were kids of McDonald's, and it goes, McDonald's is your kind of place. Hamburgers in your face. French fries up your nose. Pickles between your toes.
I do remember.
Those kind of shakes, they come from polluted lakes. McDonald's is your kind of place.
This is the kids
version. I remember
version.
The kids version, the riff. Yeah, he's exactly right.
That was the one we grew up with.
Absolutely, so. Yeah.
I remember
that was it, guys.
Great green gobs of sleep, grimy gopher guts, mutilated monkey butts. He wrote that too.
You're killing me. I'm literally dying in here.
By the way, V8.
V8.
See if you guys can find the V8 jingle, which is.
You know, there,
it sure doesn't taste like tomato juice.
The thing is there is an art. To this, creating the classic earworm, something that just sticks in your head. And, you know, the fact that we can robotically recall these things is pretty amazing.
It's a testament to how powerful that form of advertising is.
What movie is that song from, Preston?
By the way,
is it Meatballs?
What?
Great Green.
No, it's Bill Murray is singing it in.
It's
in Caddyshack.
Caddyshack.
It's
Aaron Brockovich.
But Steve, okay, so speaking of jingles, for the best sleep in the whole wide world, visit MyPillow.com. There's a Daily Rush video of you I was dying watching it last night. The look on your face.
I love my pillow.
I love my pillow.
But right, if you look at the commercial,
But that's exactly
hilarious in that video.
That's exactly what he does.
Oh my God,
dude,
you got to see it, Casey. Marissa has pulled up the video. I'll see if I can find this. Hang on, Marissa, I've got the.
I gotta see it now.
It's you, whatever it is. You make this face, and I couldn't. I rewound it like five or six times just to look at the expression. It's a Daily Rush video that's up right now. I'm waiting to.
Is it there?
To find, hang on. I got to go through it, and I'm trying to kill some time here.
Weird.
It was, I don't know. It struck me when it happened, but hang on a second.
Best pillow in the world.
I love my pillow.
It's very Gary Lowery.
All right. Anyway, Marissa, pull up the V8 thing again there. Okay, yes. So V8, which he wrote the jingle for, by the way, has, Kathy, it has tomatoes, carrots, celery, beets, parsley, lettuce, watercress, and spinach in it.
I have a V8 fairly often, and I also like they have a greener juice too that is a little bit more heavy on kale and things like that.
I haven't had a V8 in a long time, and I really do. I've always liked.
There's
V8.
A company called Bot House, that does really straight up organic, like supercharged green, like juice, mm-hmm.
I could never drink the tomato juice or V8.
No?
Nah,
just didn't feel right?
Yeah. It was like too thick or something.
Yeah, put some vodka. I love that.
Thin it out with vodka.
No, and you know what? I don't like Bloody Marys.
Ooh, yum.
I always go with the mimosa.
Okay. By the way, here's that McDonald's jingle. A snappy place.
God, I used to, after church, we'd go to McDonald's every Sunday, and it was wonderful.
Hang on, real quick.
Jesus loves hamburger.
Melinda. Hey, Melinda, good morning.
Good morning.
Hi, it says here that you can sing the great, big, great green gobs of greasy, grimy gopher guts.
Yes, I can, as a matter of fact.
Fired up.
I used to sing it as a kid.
All right.
Great big globs of greasy, slimy gopher guts, stimulated monkey feet. Chopped up baby parakeets. If only I had a spoon, but I got a straw.
Nice.
That's an atonal song, but it works.
All right. You know what we need to do? We need to take a break. Yeah. We don't have the V8 jingle, but that's okay.
This 93.3 WMMR audio on demand program returns after a brief word from our sponsors.
Hey, it's Preston. Listen, when I want to relax, I go to Hand and Stone Massage Facial Spa. Listen, whether you want a rejuvenating massage or refreshing facial, Hand and Stone is the place to go. Introductory massages or facials start at just $59.95. Visit handandstone.com or one of their 50 locations in the Delaware Valley. Restrictions apply. See spa for details.
Are you ready for love? If so, Stephen makes it easy, handpicking diamonds to create a stunning engagement ring that's guaranteed to take her breath away. Stephen Singer Jewelers, real love experts at the other corner of 8th and Walnut, or IHateStephenSinger.com.
This is the Preston and Steve Show podcast.
I was telling Steve the other day, and it's been this way for several years, but it just rang home to me the other day that I got the report cards.
Oh, you got it on your phone.
Emailed to me.
Yeah.
Yeah, so you get the e-report cards now.
I thought that was a mind blower.
Which is a whole different story.
And you were excited. Your son did well.
Yes, all three of my kids did great. And it's just, I was such a horrible student and I had terrible, terrible grades, especially once I got past like 6th, 7th grade.
So the age of deflecting, the age of delaying the report card is over. Unless you are an adroit computer hacker.
Yeah.
Unless you're,
Yeah.
If you're Matthew Broderick in War Games, you can do it.
Did any of you guys try to fix grades or did you have decent grades? Yeah, I tried to fix grades, yes, and I got busted.
You
just couldn't do it.
Did you do try to erase the grade and write it in perfectly?
Well, not write it. I tried to use a typewriter.
Oh, typewriter, right. Okay.
Yeah, so with... Yeah, and what did you have a correction? Yeah. That the typewriter that you have at home is going to be the exact same font, the exact same, print ink color.
It's like a huge bold A.
It's funny because the B on our typewriter only prints half the B as well.
So you would, the little clacker that has the B on it or whatever you're trying to do, you'd have to line up the paper just right on the roller and then kind of test fire it. You just grab it. with your hand and like move it up slowly and see, okay, is that going to hit the mark in the right spot? Okay. And then
you're like
the moment of truth. You're standing over that
please,
button.
Please.
And then clack. Damn it.
No.
And then you're gone.
There's no coming back.
Well, now you're
in trouble for both. Math, I see.
Now you're in trouble for a bad grade and for trying to fix your bad grade. Oh my God.
I became so adroit at doing this that other kids hired me to do it.
Are you serious?
Yep. And I did not use a typewriter.
You were that guy?
I was that guy. I didn't use a typewriter.
So a quick question, Nick. When you were issued your report cards, were the grades typed into the categories or
yes.
were they okay
but right. I did not use a typewriter because of the dilemma Preston just presented. I used a graphite pencil and was able to make it look I forged them really well and so there were a few that were easier to forge than others. You know, the D into the B, you could do an F into a B. You never wanted to aim too high, so A's were rare. But there were ways
to do it. Says you're getting a scholarship to Harvard, and you're only in sixth grade. For the many years, guys, I mean, my report cards were handwritten. The grade would be handwritten,
right.
Okay,
in ink by the teacher.
Yeah, not until I get to high school. Yeah. But in like middle school and stuff like that, and progress reports and so forth, that was all written out by hand.
Yeah.
I can't believe you were that guy, Nick. Like, I remember that guy in our school.
I got paid well too.
I always did well, so I didn't have to do this, but I remember being obsessed with the numbers that you would get next to your grade, and it would coincide with a comment, you know, at the bottom of your report card. So, like, you know, works well with others, you know, helps others.
Seems to have no soul.
No, it's active in class, but I would be obsessed with it, and if one marking period I got helps others and then didn't the next time, I'd be like, well, why does that teacher think I don't help others anymore? You know, and I would be obsessed with the numbers that went along. Yeah.
Were you straight A's, B's? What were you?
I was A's and B's. Yeah. Okay. I mean, I got straight A's occasionally, but I was A's and B's.
And going to Nick, I remember people like you in school. I never.
The forgers.
I didn't get to them, but they didn't forge report cards. I knew guys who would like make fake IDs and stuff like that.
Oh, we tried that.
Did you do that?
Yeah, no, that failed miserably.
I was actually exceptionally good at stuff like that because I'm a bit of an artist.
Yeah, you are.
But I never employed it for those nefarious.
I knew a guy who actually had a gigantic poster board that was made out to look like a Missouri State license, and you would stand in front of it.
That is great.
Take That's a picture
awesome.
Of it.
Job.
And then they'd, you know, shrink
it down.
Shrink down, cut it out, and laminate it. Because then, at that time, the licenses were just laminated pieces of paper, basically.
Yeah.
And so it wasn't like the hard credit card type material you have now.
Right, with the strip.
Well, so around here, the easy fake ID that was kind of legit was to go to New Jersey and get it, because at a time
you didn't go to New Jersey though. They would always set it up at the Adams Mark Hotel. You would just go get it.
No, we would go to New Jersey. You'd actually take somebody else's birth certificate. You didn't have to go with photo ID. You take their birth certificate and you would get a real New Jersey license.
Well, there was a ring. They got busted at the Adams Mark, but they came to my school and they set up
a
dorm
presentation.
Yeah. Well, no. Somebody...
We had some ID forgers here today.
No, they set it up through somebody, and they set up in somebody's dorm room, and
oh, you're
so
in college,
like
right.
10 people.
But those were fake.
But they were legit.
No, I know.
They
but,
were legit New Jersey licenses.
What I'm saying is that they so the people that I know would actually go over and get a real New Jersey license in New Jersey. Now, the actual person that it was couldn't then go get a license, so like the group of friends would be like, okay, this, you know, this person's old enough to drive and have a license and whatever, send them over to get the fake ID so that they could then buy the alcohol.
Let me clarify how this is happening. So you would go over to New Jersey and enter the paperwork to get a legitimate New Jersey license.
Yep. They have to have a New Jersey.
How would that happen?
They'd have to have a New Jersey address, and they'd have to have, I believe it was the person's birth certificate. So it had to be a group of people in on it. So I remember a friend of mine did it. She took our older friend's birth certificate over and got a New Jersey license because back in the day, Pennsylvania changed, I guess, before Jersey, and Jersey was still just a little picture, and you know it was laminated onto the license. That's it.
Yeah. Okay.
Let me go back to the report card thing real quick. I have Nick on the phone line. Hey, Nick, good morning.
Am I on the air?
You are.
I'm on the air. Oh, my God. Hold on. Bernice, turn on the radio.
There we go. What's happening, Nick?
Nick sucks it. Kathy licks it. And Casey just won't touch it. It's just a bird.
I get it.
When everybody's good. Yeah, you know, sort of. All right, what do you want, man? What are you calling?
All right, I want to waste a little time. My son actually interned for you guys.
Oh?
Was
greatest day of our lives.
Exactly.
Who was it?
It was a very good student.
Oh, you had to ask, Kathy.
Sorry.
What'd you say?
No, go ahead. So get to your point. What's your comment, Nick?
Anyway, he forged his grades for like a year, and we didn't find out until we went for conferences. We're like, what do we need conferences for? I mean, he's getting straight A's. Oh. I mean, these were so good. They had a watermark on it.
Wow! So you get this call. You have to go in for a conference with the teacher, but yet by your perception of everything, he's doing phenomenally well in school.
That was so awful. She's expressing concern about his grades, and I'm just looking at her like she has three heads. Like, what are you talking about?
And so he's doing the watermark and everything on the
collecting $50 for every A from his uncles. It was unbelievable.
Wow!
Wow! All right, who was this intern, Nick? What's his name?
His name is Nick.
Oh, his name is Nick.
Is he selling pot in Colorado these days?
Not that I know of.
It's a different intern, Nick, I guess. All right, well, thank you for your call, man. We appreciate it. Let me go next to Chris. Hey, Chris, good morning.
What?
Okay.
I second the motion.
What the hell is going on?
What's up, Billy?
Marissa when she came in with the clips.
Oh, okay. Oh, all right. Yes, actually, that's very good then.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
All right, what'd you want to tell us?
No, I was another one of those entrepreneurs where, I mean, I was only making like $5 a grade on the bus, you know, before the kids got dropped off. But the best part was there was four quarters every year. So if you changed the grade in the get-go, the first quarter,
Yeah. Basically
they had to come to you every single time because that they show every four quarters, so you had to do it all the way through the year.
Yeah.
Billy, what was your technique? How'd you do it?
Oh, I was an artist, so I had all types of erasers and pens and pencils, and it was really easy to copy, like, the dot matrix.
Oh, yeah. Okay, yeah. So you were able to basically do an impressionistic letter, a B or an A or whatever needed to be done.
That's why I don't know why anybody would go to Nick McElwain. His handwriting is absolutely terrible.
Yes, but my tracing is exemplary.
Tracing is wonderful.
Yeah, no, and he's right. The dot matrix
made it easier.
That's how you do it, yeah.
Man, I don't know why I didn't think of that. Let me go to an anonymous caller. Hey, you're on the air. Good morning.
All I did was get out of the shower.
Yes, thank you.
All right, so what did you do?
I would Photoshop my report cards. I'd scan them and then trace every line, type every part of the text, just repeat all of it so it looked crystal clear from the start.
Yeah, that's actually a very good system. It used to be a good system. Now, obviously, you can't do that with the email.
No, were you ever found out?
No, I graduated last in the class. My parents had no clue. They had no idea.
And so to this day, they don't know.
No, I mean they don't need to know.
It's
not like they told you what point you graduated in. It's just I would meet with the guidance counselors all the time, and they said, like, you know, you're 240 out of 240. I was like, well, what do you want from me?
All right, so
you're a guidance counselor.
And
where
has life taken you now?
I don't want to disclose too much. I'm in government.
The IRS.
Are you a senator? Are you a state senator?
I'm actually President Obama.
Oh, well, see? Well, you know, there you go. You're proof positive.
Yep, absolutely. All right, thanks, man. Let me go to...
I kill people for a living.
Let me go to Dan. Hey, Dan, good morning.
Gadzooks, guys.
Gadzooks, my man, what's up?
So, all right, you know that, like, if you get jury duty, that paper with the ink on it, where, you know, the typewriter?
Yeah.
So that's how our report card came. So okay. There was no way we could change it. So what I did was, my mother's signature was so easy to forge. So I just forged that and mailed the one we had to mail back with the, you know, the parent got it. And needless to say that, my daughter just got, you know, went to school and she started pulling the same crap, you know, we pulled on our parents thinking she was slick. So my mom's basically, you know, telling me all this that I tried to do. And I'm like, well, you know, I forged your signature all those years. And she looked at me, but I'm in my 30s now, like she was going to rip my head off. And then my sister said the same thing. Yeah, we were doing it too.
So, but never was there any question raised. She never asked how you were doing, what your grades were like. She never brought it up.
Not really, because there were never any notes home.
Okay.
So, and she saw my tests, they were, like, okay, but for the most part, like, my papers were just terrible.
Yeah.
I felt like C's and were bad, but I guess in her mind, that's Wow. Hey,
C was actually a good to bump a C up to a B, no problem.
Not bad.
An F to a B, not a problem.
But it looks, it's almost like a B, the way the F, the letter itself.
It's just right there.
Two little curly Q's,
yeah.
And you got a B.
It's almost begging for
it. I think that's probably what I try to do. All right, this is a question for you. Here is a text that says, my friends and I beat all of you. We would go in the grade book, change our grades before he even put them in for the report card. And then this part is interesting. One of us would flirt with him and someone else would go in and change the grades on his desk.
Wow.
That opens up a whole other line of conversation.
And porno films.
But no, what I'm saying are do pretty girls flirt with a teacher to try to get a better grade?
Kathy?
Can I tell you something?
No, I never did.
I flirted all the time.
Yeah.
Did it work?
No, because they always knew I was a guy dressed as a girl.
Oh, yeah. Kathy already made good grades, but you know what? I'm curious if there are girls who will play that. I never even really thought of that. You know?
I envy that.
The ability?
The ability. Mm-hmm. Anything that having to do with looks, I've never enjoyed that aspect of life. But yeah, I bet you that's to use that as a deflection.
Yeah.
How pathetic. Pathetic.
Not even just to as a diversion to go and change grades, but just to try to favor, you know, to get a better grade than you were actually deserved just because you turned on the charm to this guy and batted your eyes and
had sex with him.
Had sex.
I mean, that's honestly.
Well, that's,
is that really what it's come down to?
I don't know.
For all sorts of incredible sex. I don't get it.
All right. Let me go to Matt. Hey, Matt, good morning.
Hey, man, good morning.
What's up, buddy?
You guys rock.
Appreciate it, man. What do you want to tell us?
Hey, man. All right, so back in high school, a buddy of mine asked me to change his grades on his report card because I was taking a digital photography course, and I was pretty good at it, right? So, sure, he hands me his report card. I changed it, you know, C's to A's, whatever. I said, you know, don't ask me to do it again. I don't really care, but here you go. So he takes his report card home to his parents. His parents submit the report card to his insurance company. And he ends up getting a good student discount on his policy.
Wow.
And he's freaking out. He's like, dude, we're going to get insurance fraud or something because, you know, we changed my grades. And he's freaking out. And nothing ever happened of it, but he got, you know.
He got a good student discount on his insurance with a fraudulent.
He did.
Great. Yeah. Wow. Well, there you go. We're really not stating a case against doing this. But now there'd be no way to do this.
Oh, yeah. That's the thing.
You'd have to hack the system.
Everything, the grades are sent via email. And
how do they present when does it come up as just like a spreadsheet or?
Yeah, basically.
Okay.
Yeah, it shows each trimester and the grades and then the
comments
accumulated stuff. Now, the comments aren't in that. I think I know that there are there are meetings that you can go
hashtag
to.
Hashtag works well with others. Hashtag.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. They just post it all on social media for everyone to access.
They just tweet at you.
Yeah.
To shout at the teacher's feet and your grades.
Let me go to Mike. Hey, Mike, good morning.
Good morning, guys.
Hey, what's up, bud?
Hey, I knew a ditch. This girl, complete, like, butt duds. But I never thought she was capable of pulling this off. She convinced her parents that she graduated college.
Yeah.
Went as far as printing a fake diploma and they bought it.
Yeah.
And they were so proud of her for pulling this off that they gave her a trip to Europe.
Oh, wait. Did they were fooled by it?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Completely. I thought they were so proud that she was
impressed.
Able to. Yes.
Wow.
You are quite the little forager.
That looks real.
Yeah. We're sending you to Europe.
Trip to Europe. Congratulations. Yeah.
Wow. So what? So she never attended college whatsoever?
I think she was just like, I don't know, skipped class all the time.
Okay.
So she went.
She was enrolled, but she wasn't going.
They were paying for it.
Yeah, yeah.
So she needed to show some results. So she forged a full-on diploma.
Wow. I bet you this. Thanks, Mike. You remember there was the big, for years there have been the services online where you can go get term papers and all that stuff. I guarantee you there has to be some way online to get facsimile
forged
diplomas.
Grades. Oh, well, diplomas. Yeah.
Oh, you can get fake pay stubs.
Fake pay stubs?
Yeah, so if you have to show somebody, say, that you're working.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, like a court?
Yeah, maybe something like
that. Oh, my God.
Okay.
The hell?
I guess you can get everything.
Fake pay stubs?
If you're going to fake graduate college, it's got to be a big school where...
Well, make it a good school. You don't want to get a bad education from a substandard fake college.
Well, no.
what I was going to say is, like, what parent doesn't want to show up to their kid's graduation ceremony?
That's true.
But if they're not going to call their name, if it's, like, let's say, a Penn State or a big school where they go, okay, the entire engineering class, you yes, stand sir. Up.
Case, easy. You just, what you do is you hire 900 extras. you rent a super huge wedding tent.
Here's a website, Steve. Fake high school diplomas and transcripts.
There you go.
Now only $49.99 each. Your See? Choice of high school name and graduation date. Free Board of Education embossed gold raised foil diploma seal. Diplomas are printed on 8x5 by 11.
I want one.
Heavyweight ivory paper stock. Transcripts are printed on genuine anti-tamper security paper. Get a fake high school diploma and transcript for as low as $99. And yes, I did say genuine.
No, Preston, it's actually spelled W-I-N-E. So is obviously it,
genuine.
So, Steve, would you put Harvard?
I'd put Harvard.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, you know, though, the art of selling anything like that is to be one notch off.
Right.
So that you.
So Yale.
Yeah.
Okay.
Now, I'd go Oxford. They're never going to go over
Cambridge.
To Europe and figure that out.
Cambridge.
I mean, now, I don't know. Do I get any discount because I'm a member of the clergy?
Probably. Oh. Yeah.
I feel like we should just get these anyway. We should get our Harvard.
Oh,
and Yale
I would love
diplomas.
A medical. You know, medical degrees look the most impressive.
Let me go to Mitchell. Hey, Mitchell, how you doing?
Morning, guys.
Hey, what's up, bud?
I don't know how anybody got away with it. I gave it a whirl one time, you know, changed everything, brought it home, handed my report card to my mom, and she starts freaking out. And that's four B's and two C's. I didn't understand. And she looks down at the bottom. Now, I guess you don't try it when your mom's an accountant. And she says, I don't understand it. How do you have a 1.75 GPA?
Dude. Oh, yeah, you were destined for failure right from the get-go.
So she makes this huge ordeal of it, calls the school, says, you know, well, I don't understand. You know, this is really important. We need to get this changed. Oh, no. You know, yeah.
She believed you?
Yeah, she believed the grade.
Thought the school
but
was, an,
was
error.
An error with the GPA.
Correct. So she calls the school. So talk about backfiring in your face. I'm in the principal's office.
She went as far as to defend you to the school.
Yeah.
Oh, dude, that's
my
harsh,
son's
man.
No idiot.
How anybody got away with the GPA on the bottom. I guess parents don't look at it.
Yeah, I don't know.
So you changed all the time. I had one bad grade.
Just a couple of times I did it.
That I was like, oh, should I do this? But it was just a D. It wasn't, you know.
My grades were so bad that I remember getting up in the middle of the night because I would hide my report card and vomiting because I was so afraid of my dad murdering me.
Did you get in trouble from him?
Of course I did.
So you'd
didn't hit me or anything, but my dad yelling at me was like getting
that
hit.
Was enough.
He pushed you down the steps.
Right. Yeah, right.
He never hit you.
He'd hit me with a sack of oranges.
Yeah, a sack of oranges so there'd be no bruises.
Yeah.
Well, that's exactly why when my kids do get good grades, but every now and again, they'll bring home a clunker of a test.
Yeah.
I don't freak out about it. Because I don't want them to hide things from me, right?
So, I understand
like,
that, yeah.
So the last time my son brought home, he got like a C in a religion test, and he was like, oh, and he's showing it to me. I'm like, all right. I'm like, well, this just shows me that you didn't put forth any effort. I'm like, I'm not mad because this isn't, you're the one who has to live with this. You know what I mean?
So, but like, it verifies to me that I'm right in loving your sisters more.
Yes.
but the only time that I've gotten angry over it is when homework is repeatedly not getting done because that's different
that's
than
That's what
a
I
test.
Say.
That's it, totally
let
different.
Let me ask you, if you don't put forth an effort, then I have a problem. But if you try your hardest and you come home with a 70 or an F or whatever, but you've tried really hard, okay, like I can live with that.
Do you find it hard, Preston, knowing what your study habits as a kid, having to chide your own kids for not doing what you know?
Of course.
Yeah.
Because I didn't do homework. I just didn't do it. I just lied about it and I didn't do it. And I'll deal with that later.
You know what sucked is I was a terrible college student. When I finally went back and graduated, I had the best semester that I had. And I realized, A, going to class makes all the difference in the world. And B, you learn things when you go to class.
Yeah.
And the appreciation for an education finally dawned on me. And I wish that I had thought that freshman year.
Do you now regret not buying a better diploma online?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. No, I wish, you know, throughout my educational career that I just had appreciated the learning aspect of it more. Because you don't get that opportunity later in life, or not as often anyway.
I'm going to go to an anonymous caller who says he can hack into the system, Steve. Hi, you're on the air. Good morning.
Hey, guys. How's it going?
Good. What's up, man?
So we nowadays, it's not as easy because they have these new programs where parents can actually log in right then and there anytime during the marking period and see how they're doing, like if they were late to class.
So you constantly get sort of a status report.
Live.
Yep.
Wow.
You can check in whenever you want.
Yep. Wow.
So basically, if,
holy
like, you know,
F,
your son's going into third period, you can just sit there on the computer and see if he actually showed up on time because the teacher actually has to submit that what the timestamp that he showed up to class.
Yeah, the district will have an account for you, and you can jump in there.
Oh, my
yeah.
God.
It's pretty wild,
what
man.
A nightmare.
What the thing was, we used to actually hack in, but now they changed it to it. Actually, it would timestamp every single time you changed the grade. So we had to think of an alternative way of doing it, and we found out that at the Chrome extension, like Google's browser,
yes.
If you just, on any page, if you right-click and there's a button that says inspect, so if you click on that, it'll bring up the coding for the website. So all you have to do is search for, like, grade F, change it to an A, and hit OK. It doesn't actually change that grade in the computer, like the school's database. But if you just call your parents in and say, hey, look at my grades, it'll say an A, and they would be none the wiser.
So, but all right, Anonymous. So that works. That works up to a point. But what when you get to the end of the year and your GPA? So
well, you can technically as long as they're just looking at the website, you can just keep editing the code real quick so they can see it. As long as they don't get anything in the mail.
Yeah.
You just keep
eventually, the clock is ticking.
You're going to have to fess up.
Well, the clock will be ticking for any way you change the grade.
But I tell you what,
it's true, the
knowledge and the talent to be able to go in through a side door through that program and F with the code, you know, it means you have a capability there.
Unless somebody just told you about it.
Unless just someone told you about it.
Yeah.
All right. Thanks, man. I appreciate
it. Have a good day.
Yeah. It's a different world as far as grades.
I don't know, man, because part of the deal,
reports.
Showing up. I mean, now, I was a good student. I mean, I wasn't a screw up, but it was par for the course for showing up late for class or skipping a few periods. It was part of the deal.
I would have a hard time. If it were me back in the 1980s again going to school now with these policies, I'd have a really hard time. I'm going to go to Elise real quick. Hi, Elise.
Hey, how's it going?
Good. How's it going, Elise?
Good. I just want to say, first of all, I love you guys, and thank you for getting me through my work day on a regular basis going to teach students.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you. You're a teacher, okay?
I am. That's why I called. I wanted to address Kathy's anxiety over teacher comments and just let her know we have even more anxiety than you do picking what to say about students, especially when we don't like them.
Okay, let's say you have a student that you really don't like. Do you just leave it blank, or what's the default comment?
Well, we're required to put a comment no matter what, and if it's a student I'm not too fond of, but they're a good student, I typically put thinks independently.
There's no comment like whatever.
Yeah, I wish there was. Or sometimes they get on my nerves and I can't stand them. I wish, but it doesn't happen.
Thinks,
or you know how I feel. I often feel that would be a good one for the parents.
Yeah, thinks independently is such a vague.
Yeah, Elise, can you go as far as saying is difficult to work with and so forth? Or is that just opening up a can of worms?
Yeah, that's a can of worms. I've put something before, like, student has improved, and then I had a parent email me 20 questions saying, why didn't you tell me they needed improvement? What do you mean they improved? How did they improve? Are they not doing good again? And I just was like, no, I just didn't know what to say about you.
Could you put student occupies physical space?
Unfortunately, no. I think that they waste time, but that's opening a whole other can of worms.
At least when you have parent-teacher meetings, is that an opportunity to open up and be a little more honest?
It is, but sometimes that can get a little bit intense as well, because especially if I just put they think independently, then the parent is like, well, you've never said anything on the comments that makes me question what's going on.
I'll tell you how things have changed, because I remember years ago, if the teacher were to send home anything, that my parents would my mother would say, what did you do? In other words, the idea was to always to take the teachers, the adult is telling you something about your child, your teacher, and so the parent is going to investigate. Now I think the reflexive action is to go at the teacher. What do you mean?
Oh yeah, I've had parents say after an interim, I would like you to give me your action plan, how you will fix my student's grade. I want to know what you plan to do to fix my student's grade, and I'm just like, I plan to continue to teach, I think.
That's what I'm going to do.
Now, what are you going to do?
But at least, let me ask, is that, that's not the majority of parents saying those type of things,
No, it's not. And, I mean, I'll be honest. You're talking about the program online where parents can log in anytime they want. Mm-hmm. Probably about 50% of parents don't even use the program. Or I've also discovered students will go in and change the password for their parent, and then the parent doesn't understand how to get it fixed.
There we go. There you go. Yeah.
Playing off the stupidity, the technical stupidity of their parents.
Right.
Interesting. All right, Elise. Thanks a lot.
Thank you. Bye.
All right. We'll see you later. All right. Yep.
I'm going to order a diploma.
Hey, you should. Order one right now.
Maybe I
will, too.
Let's do it.
$50.
Let's get the most impressive array of diplomas to put up on the wall so that when guests come in.
Take a look at our credentials.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, so.
Yeah.
And yet they're playing fart sound effects. Yeah. And they all graduated from Cambridge.
Yeah. Law degree.
Medical degree. The whole thing.
Yeah. Professor.
We're medical lawyers.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Thought you were pre-law.
Same thing.
New, old, and everything in between. MMR rocks.
Don't you love meeting new people?
I do.
Meeting a new guy this morning. It's cool to have him in town. Please welcome Dan Soder to our studio.
Thank you. That's a picture of me on that giant TV.
Your big head.
Oh, yeah.
I have a massive head.
I'm curious if Nick has a large head, too.
Oh, dude, this isn't even a competition. I will blow my head size. What size fitted hat do you
put your hat on,
Dan.
Take your hat off.
Before you start the competition and the trash talking, 8 3/4.
What?
Uh-huh. That's what I'm talking about.
Are you a Macy's Day fly?
Yeah, put his hat on.
It's deceiving. Here, try wearing his hat.
Wait,
is it tight?
Second. Yeah, it's tight.
It's tight.
I told you I was the giant head king. How dare you?
All right.
Your measly Pennsylvania large head.
Let's get some condoms now.
I wish.
You are taller than me, though. Yeah. So how tall are you?
6'3".
So by proportion, I think I win.
Yeah, you do win.
All right.
But, man, I wear a size 8.
Yeah.
That's insane.
Yeah, Nick actually starred as the brain in the live Pinky and the Brain of the school. Yeah, it's this huge cranium.
So you must have taken a massive amount of abuse like I did in middle school.
Yeah, it was when it was like adolescence because my head was this size when I was in 8th grade.
Well, yeah, bobblehead.
Yeah.
Let me ask you guys.
Human bobblehead.
Did they have to farm out for graduation for the caps and gowns?
Guess yeah. Okay. I had the.
Are you kidding?
I had the scrunchie one that like they gave to the same one.
Like
everyone had it. Yeah, the
are you
effing one.
Kidding? Yes. They had to get a special cap.
I remember how angry my football coach was in high school when I went to get a helmet, and he was like, "Damn it, Soder." He's like, "Your head is just too damn big."
What position did you play?
Outside linebacker. Okay.
Oh my god! All right.
I was the golf cart that carried off the injured kids. that was my head.
Let me ask you: Have you guys, either of you guys, ever gone horseback riding? And were you able to fit in the helmets that they have there?
What kind of regal life are you living?
You never go fox hunting, do you?
He's
Dan?
Like, yeah. When you're skeet shooting with your father on his property, did you notice that the servants come late with iced tea? Like, yeah,
he did go for obscura, didn't he?
Horse riding.
When you play highline, what kind of...
All right, can I just... A little backstory. I went horseback riding with somebody with a large head, and they had a hard time getting a helmet. Like, because I'm just trying to think of things where...
But I know what you're saying, and yes, anything... I went zip lining this summer. I was at a wedding up in the mountains of Colorado.
Oh.
Yeah. Yes. I was just joking. Of course, I live a very luxurious life. But we went zip lining, and they didn't have a helmet that could fit me. The guy's like, "You need to put a helmet on."
And it sucks when anything like that. My wife convinced me to go try tandem parachute jump.
Okay. Right?
So I go, and they had no guy who was big enough to tandem with me. And I felt like it was some bizarre... homosexual dating service that I was trying to match me up with guys, and regardless of whether everyone's looking at you, feel as if everyone's looking at you.
Yeah.
So when you're on the zip line tour and they can't accommodate your head, you feel like a jerk.
Yeah, yeah. You just feel like you're like, I just don't even want to do this anymore.
Yeah, yeah.
Especially with you tandem driving, that's pretty dangerous.
Yeah.
And you're like, we need to get a big old bear for you. We need to get a big old.
Yeah.
Oh my
but
God.
It's a scary thing. But you're from Colorado, right?
I grew up in Aurora, which is, you know.
I sense the fondness coming from you.
I just, I don't, every time, you know.
Is that where the shooting
was? Yeah. But it's always had kind of a bad rap in Colorado.
Has it? Because I've been. I was years and years ago. It seemed like a fine little town.
Yeah, it was interesting. Colin Quinn, who's easily probably the smartest person I've ever met in my life, broke it down one of the first times I met him.
Yeah.
I said, I'm from Aurora, Colorado. And he goes, oh, yeah, it's a popular suburb in the 70s, then urban decay in 80s and 90s. Like, yeah, that's exactly.
No kidding. So, wait, he's smart?
Yeah.
Why? Then he does a really good job of not throwing it in your face that he's that, you know what
smartest
I mean?
Smartest person, one of the smartest people I've ever met in my life. Wow. And he mumbles. That's why people think.
He does.
But if you listen in between the mumbles, some of the smartest stuff.
Well, his live, not to deflect onto his stuff, but his live stage stuff, his stand-up's brilliant, but his live stage presentations are fantastic.
Yeah, he did. Didn't he tape Unconstitutional here?
He did a run here, and it was just great.
It's
just
great.
Hilarious stuff. So, but you were in college and decided to depart for stand-up, I guess, relatively.
I just didn't get along with the people I went to college with. I went to the University of Arizona, and it was just all rich kids from San Diego.
Yeah. Right.
And so I sold them pot, and then I guess started doing stand-up.
Well, it's good enough for Jay-Z.
Yeah, I make a little money off their dads.
Right.
But yeah, it was one of those things where I just didn't get along. Like, I didn't feel like I fit in socially. So I started actually working in radio, and then I went and just did stand-up.
What market were you working radio in?
It's Tucson.
Oh, in Tucson.
Number 62.
Yeah, man.
You know your stuff.
Started from the bottom. Yeah. It's like mid-range.
I started from the bottom.
Where did you start?
Salem, Missouri.
Oh, that's one of the lower Salems.
Oh, God, yes. That's it's an embarrassing thing. But you know what? I liked starting in a small market. It was fun to work my way up to a major market radio station along the way.
Well,
it was
cool. Preston, tell them what some of your on-air responsibilities included obituaries.
Oh, school lunches, obituaries. The crop report. I did the fishing reports, all that stuff.
You know, good God, I'm so glad I didn't have to do that. I just had to do speed breaks in between alternative songs.
Oh, no kidding. Yeah. Oh, well, you started in the alt format. That's cool.
I was playing
country and stuff like that.
So, I actually loved the station I started working at, and it was kind of cool because here I was like at 19 hanging out with like 30-year-olds,
and I
got along with them way better than everyone I went to college with.
Did you go by Dan, or were you Dan Boy, or the Ultra Boy, or
I actually, my radio name was, so then we had the air check tapes, where you put it in, and every time you'd fire the mic, it would go on the cassette.
Mm-hmm. Skimming machines, they called them.
Yeah. And my first break on air, my voice cracked. So I just wrote Scared Dan for some reason on it, and my PD was like, well, that's your name. And I was that was a joke for you.
Right.
And so then, that's what I went by.
Scared Dan.
Yeah.
Join Scared Dan this weekend at the Pizza Hut.
Yeah. It's the remotes. God, the remotes.
Yeah. And they're really, when you first start doing them, it's a terrifying, especially it's obvious that you're a guy who's not, overinflating of yourself. And why anyone is showing up to see me, you have no idea.
At a tire store at 11 a.m. on a Saturday in Arizona when it's 112.
Can I share a remote story? I don't think I've ever told you guys this. I was working in Jefferson City, Missouri. I was at a McDonald's or a Burger King. I was at a fast food restaurant, and a group of kind of teenagers came in. And so
he does the fishing report. Come see him live.
No, this was past fishing reports. I'd moved up in market size at this point. But this is like Tucson size. But anyhow, and I had T-shirts, which you're always armed with to give away. And so I walk over to these teens, and it's a radio station T-shirt that I'm giving this cute girl. And she kind of looks at me all confused and everything. I was like, I was kind of weird. And I go back to the promotion person who was with me, and he's like, you realize down the street is a school for the deaf.
Oh, no.
And I'm like, they don't listen, do they?
I've given her the
shirt. Go ahead. Be that way, bitch.
Right. Hey, Dan.
Ungrateful.
Oh, it's horrible.
I'm going to put you on the spot here. I want you to do a speed break in between. I've got the REM Orange Crush, and you're going into the Killers. Somebody told me. Are you ready?
Wait, you guys are 93.3 WMMR?
That's correct.
Oh, God, let's shake off the ring rust.
All right, here we go.
What's the intro? It's the Killers. What song?
Somebody told me.
That's
20
sixth,
seconds.
That's, well, the sixth to the post.
Six to the post?
Six to the post. You remember that?
Yeah.
Good. Okay, all right, so we're gonna play this song. Is this the end of the song?
Yeah. No, we're gonna listen to the whole
thing. All right, here we go.
93.3 WMMR, it's Scared Dan. You're listening to Preston and Steve. There's probably some giveaway going on. WMMR.com.
That is! Yeah.
It's not as good.
No, that's that, listen, right. For your
going off here.
Put you on the spot.
Yeah. I used to just, I was so lazy. That's what I miss about radio.
You were scared.
No, I wasn't. I was just a pothead that would just stand out in the I'd just be out in the parking lot smoking cigarettes.
I was talking to our interns last week about why I got into radio, and it was because I was lazy. I thought, here's a job where you only had to work 4 hours a day, and then I realized, well, if you actually want to be good at it, work is involved. But like when you, from the outside looking in, doesn't it look like it's the laziest job on the planet?
Yeah, even on being on the inside, the work, the work you do.
I tell you honestly, there's a story of a woman who I had auditioned for her show in New York. She was the lazy. Her show started at 6. She would show up at 6:30, and they would just kill time. But so she's doing a political talk show in San Francisco, I think it was, a political talk show. And she fell asleep. I mean, it's not like they went to a song and she fell asleep. It's nothing but talk. So she falls asleep during her own conversation.
While I hope it wasn't while she was talking.
I know. Steve, when we worked at the other radio station, there was a radio station right next to ours. And her show started at 6 o'clock. She came strolling in at 6:30.
Oh, yeah.
They called her on it, right? So then they pull me into the office. They're like, hey, what time is she showing up? And I don't know.
Great. They put you in the middle of this blood feud.
I had no idea there was a feud. And I'm like, I don't know. I think she comes in probably around like 6:30. I see her. And they're like, oh, well, then she got hip to it because we have to, you know, check in with fobs, you know.
Yeah.
So they found out through technology that she was coming strolling in at 6:30. So she ended up giving her fob to an intern who was getting there at 5:30.
Clever girl. Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Did she know that you told them that she was
going to...
Oh, okay.
No, it didn't matter. She hated everybody anyway, so...
Yeah, the guys that always made me feel bad for being lazy at my job was, we had a station at our cluster called Caliente, and there was like a constant party in their studio.
And then
I would walk by and just be like, I don't know, you're listening to Nirvana, and then I'd play it, and then these guys would be like, ola, 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 just going nuts, and be like, there's no way I can give that much effort. I don't want to give that much effort.
Wow. Scared dead.
Yeah, and that guy, oh man, that guy was hilarious, Pepe. I was like, Pepe, are your papers in order? And he's like, walk away. I don't care.
So you made the jump from radio and going into to stand up. You moved to New York. What's that experience like when you first show up and go, all right, well, here I am.
How old are you when you're moving at this time, by the
way? I was 23 when I moved.
That's a bold move.
Yeah, and then I did it, and I just lived on a buddy's couch, and I was kind of like, I didn't know what it was. I was just like, I'm going to do comedy here. It was kind of ignorance is bliss, because I just showed up. I was like, things cost a lot. But I got to sell my car, so that was great. So I didn't have to worry about that, which is a weird thing when you're worried about your car your whole life. Then you move to a city where you don't have to have a car. You're like, whew, that is just relaxing.
You're exactly right. There's a point in your life, and I just realized it recently, where I thought, wow, I no longer consider whether or not I'm going to reach my destination, you know, going out to the car.
Yeah.
And it used to be a concern, like, what are the odds I'm going to make it? You know?
I had a car. When I sold my car to leave Arizona, the guy that bought it, I had an ad in the newspaper, and the guy that responded didn't speak any English, only Spanish. And he brought his sister with him that spoke English. And he was with his wife as well, who spoke no English.
Okay.
And so they're like, we're going to go on a test drive. And the sister stayed. And I took a test drive with these two people that didn't speak English. And my car was a hunk of garbage. And he was like turning on the AC and then like revving it. And I was like, you shouldn't do that. Please, if you could not do that. And I was just imagining them going. And they're like, they'll take it. I was like, yeah, I need cash right now. Here's the title. I was just like, I want to get out of here.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, that thing's on its last legs. And I'm glad I can't lie to you.
So you picked up steam a lot. You started working a lot on your on the site. You were just on Conan. How recently was that?
That was a year ago.
Was it a year ago?
Yeah, I've done Conan twice, so maybe, I don't know, again this year.
What's it like? Because he's he's doing well over on TBS, but he's I've heard some people say that they can be a little standoffish.
That Conan kid?
Yeah.
He was nothing but
was
awesome.
Was he great?
To me.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was a surreal experience. The first time I did it. You know, I forget what it's called, the machines that make the Keurigs.
Yeah.
The Keurigs that make the self thing. Andy Richter taught me how to use one of those. And it was just like, okay, this is crazy. Yeah. Like, this is a guy I grew up watching. Yeah, and he's right. teaching me how to use a coffee machine because I'm an idiot.
Oh, that's so cool. That's so cool.
There's not much to it.
Yeah, I know. I found that out. Okay. You basically just put something in and push down.
Yeah. You were trying to seduce Andy. Yeah. I just don't know how to operate.
Yeah. I'm so confused.
Did he put his arms around you like a golf swing? Let me show you how to do that.
You're strong. And then Conan came in and was like, what are you doing? It meant nothing.
Hey, if you're just tuning in, Dan Soder's here. He's gonna, I read that in 2012 you were hired by Guinness to be their brand ambassador. What's that all about?
I did shows in Philly, actually, for that.
No kidding.
Yeah. It
was, what does a brand ambassador mean? I mean, they just
drink
kind
a lot of beer.
All right.
Just drink a lot
of beer. You go to Ireland and stuff?
Yeah. Dude, that was the coolest.
We've been to the brewery.
Yeah.
That's a mofo. I don't even drink, and I was blown away.
And I don't mean to brag, but like when you go with Guinness, you go.
Oh, yeah.
Like, we were with Guinness. Yeah.
So, you know, the bar at the top.
The gravity bar.
Gravity bar.
Yeah.
You're only allowed one pint.
Mm-hmm. All
right. So I got this. I was the brand ambassador.
Yeah.
And so Fergal Murray.
He took us on a tour.
Yeah.
It was amazing.
He taught me how to pour the proper pint at the gravity bar. But I got unlimited pints. And so I have a pint. And then I asked the lady again. I'm like, hey, can I have another pint? And she's like, I'm sorry, you can only have one pint. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, I'm here with Fergal. And she's like, oh, yeah, sure, you're here with Fergal. And then he walked up, he's like, Dan! And she's like, do you want two pints? Absolutely.
He also taught us how to drink the pint properly.
Yeah.
There has to be three rings.
Yeah, you do the three drinks, and he says Americans do four drinks.
So, Dan, we're there in the brewery, and it's Preston, it's me, we're standing there with Fergal. He's shown us, you know, that there's that one.
It's a two-part pour.
Right. So he's got, it's where all the taste testers come to make sure the foam and everything is just correct.
Like right out of the giant vat.
So how great, how delicious is that?
It's like a milkshake.
Best way to describe it.
But after that, we start running around and reenacting the Laverne and Shirley opening.
Oh, that's funny.
And
he didn't know what. Wait, so you can only drink it in three sips?
Yeah, that's three drinks. It's a proper Irish way to drink a Guinness.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. And those guys are masters.
Because of the head on it, it leaves a ring in the pint, and there's supposed to be three rings by the time you're done, and he showed us how to do it.
You know,
that's drinking a lot.
Earlier this week, we were talking about a time where we got in trouble, and Casey and Kathy and I went out on this Guinness pub crawl. And
we were investors.
We were with the Guinness people, and we were...
When was this?
It was in Philly. It was... Probably 3 years ago, maybe four.
No, it was longer
than that. Probably 5 years ago.
We weren't even in the studio yet.
Was Declan with you guys?
Declan was with
that
us.
That was before my ambassadorship.
All right.
Okay.
But we were so...
I wasn't elected yet.
You weren't elected.
We were so out of our league. And I like to drink, but these people love to drink. And I felt like I didn't... Like, by bar number five... It was ridiculous.
So
half of the reason they flew me to Ireland was they wanted me to learn the product or whatever, but then they were like, your responsibility is to go to these famous bars and drink Guinness. And I was like, done.
Yeah.
But I had a strict contractual obligation that I could only drink Diageo products
because
that's who owns it.
Yes.
So I love Jameson whiskey.
Yeah.
But it is not owned by Diageo.
They own Bushmills. Cuervo is.
Cuervo, Johnny Walker. Here's the thing about the Diageo offices in New York City.
They have a bar. Burger King.
They have a bar in the office that you're not allowed to give money or tip. But if you're in the company, you can go drink at this bar.
So the way we have a coffee machine here,
they have a bar. Johnny Walker Blue. Yeah.
Whoa.
You can just get a glass of Johnny Walker Blue and not pay a dime.
Dan, I see that.
I haven't drank
liability.
In 2 years, by the way.
Really?
It was the end of the road. When I quit Guinness, I was like, I got this.
I was a Cuervo ambassador, and they took me down to Cuervo Nation, which was down in BVI, and it was insane. I mean, the first night, I passed out outside of my room. When I woke up the next day, I had peed myself. I had a broken bottle of Cuervo next to me and a phone in my lap, and I was outside of my room. I was like...
You know? Any experiences like that, Dan?
Yeah.
Because you had an epiphany.
Yeah, the last night in Dublin, we went to the... I met this Irish guy that, like, our photographer was, like, one of the coolest guys. He's from Dublin.
Right.
We went and drank at Slattery's, which is right next to the soccer stadium, and that got a little out of control. And then we went to the Brazen Head, which is the oldest pub in Dublin, and I think it's, like, from 1152.
Wow.
Jesus.
And we went and...
Is that all you remember?
He wanted to see how many gears I had. He was like, I want to see how a real American can drink. And I was like, let's do this. And I woke up naked in my hotel with drunk me had packed my suitcase, laid out my jeans. I bought a T-shirt from the Brazen Head, ironed it, and had it laid out. And I woke up and I was like, who did this? And the person I was drinking was like, you went into your room. And then I also smoked an entire pack of cigarettes that was just in this ashtray by the window. I don't know what happened last night. But.
There is a level of imbibing that, especially, I mean, when it's your occupation, when the product, that is product loyalty, and they push it.
I was sneaking Budweiser's. Because I loved Bud Heavy, yeah, and I loved my you know, when I used to drink, I used to do a shot of Jameson with a Bud back, and they're like, those are two drinks that you can't have within the company. So I would sneak down to the hotel bar and be like,
that's
let me
funny.
Get a Jameson and a Bud. Yeah. And they walk in and be like, Guinness, I need a Guinness now.
I went to the Great American Beer Festival with a microbrewery took me there, and we did nothing but drink all these craft beers and stuff. And I'm like, God, I need to go to the bar and have a Budweiser.
Yeah.
And I went and I had a Budweiser, and a couple of them showed up and they come walking by and they go, King of beers there, huh? And I was like, dude, just let me alone for a minute.
They would always mock me and they'd be like, oh, you like that rice beer? Like, all right, guys. Because they know, they're all like, you know.
Snooty.
Yeah, snooty about how it's the beer.
Yeah. What was your cheap piss beer of choice when you were in college?
Oh, man. Between, I would want to say Keystone Light because you could just get the 30 blocks.
No, Natty Ice?
I would do a Natty Ice. I never liked, I like Natty Light a little bit.
Yeah.
But Milwaukee's Beast.
The Beast. There's a bar in this city. I think it's Nick's Roast Beef, the original. It has Beast on tap.
Well, Schaefer's, which was my kind of bottom beer of choice.
Right.
I didn't know that they serve on tap in Chicago.
Really?
Yeah. And I went to this bar and someone was like, get a shot of Malort, which is an alcohol you can buy that's made from, like, I don't know what it is. And I walked in this bar on the north side, and I was like, let me get a Schaefer's on tap and a Malort. And they're like, the lady looked at me, and she goes, you want a shot of Malort? And I was like,
my limo's outside. Yeah. Let's make this quick.
I like, hey, man, when I drank, I used to like, yeah, there it is. I used to like to go to the gutter Malort. And see what they had.
Wow. Hey, I have to ask you, does anybody ever tell you, Dan, that you look like anybody famous?
I've heard Luke Perry plus a chromosome.
Okay.
Not Bob Pattinson.
I've heard Joaquin Phoenix without the cleft lip.
Uh-huh. Okay. Oh, man, I have a
Manning brother.
I have a bad one for you.
He's not going to like this.
Oh, I'm fine with it.
I apologize, but you look it's a much better looking version of Richard Kiel, Jaws from the 007
movie. Are you kidding?
Thank you.
Are you kidding?
My God, you know how to really steal my heart.
I was thinking,
I'm
going to
put
Jackson.
A gum. Big head. I'm going to put my gum wrapper like. In. So silver teeth.
The poor mutated giant guy is who you look like. From The West Wing, who was also in Revenge
Allison
of the...
Janney.
No. The, you know.
I do look like him.
I was thinking,
I don't know the West Wing.
Yeah.
Martin Sheen?
No. The guy, he was just on Brooklyn Nine-Nine. He was in Revenge of the Nerds.
Come on.
The guy that played the bad guy?
Yeah,
Married with Children?
Ted McGinley?
Not Ted McGinley, no. God damn it. He was also in Cabin in the Woods.
I'll try to look it up. Geez. I was thinking John Mayer a little bit. You ever
what?
Get that?
And the second, Bradley Whitford.
Bradley Whitford.
That is.
All right. Wow. We go from
I don't know,
Jaws to Bradley Whitford.
I'm all over the map.
You are, man.
We went from Moonraker to West Wing.
Wow. Oh, man. Well, listen, we got to take a break, but
I was watching a lot of your stuff. You're very funny.
Thanks, man.
And very insightful.
By the way, his Twitter account is at Dan Soder, and we'll put that on PrestonandSteve.com.
Brought to you by Malort.
But, Oh, it's gross.
If you want to follow along. But we hope this is just your first stop in Philly, and you'll
Absolutely.
Be back again sometime soon, man.
I mean, my God, last night was so much fun.
Come back here and see us, okay?
Yeah, thanks for having me on.
You bet, man. Dan Soder, guys, it's here for him.
Turning 50 is a big deal, and MMR is taking the better part of the year to celebrate. On Thursday, October 25th, WMMR puts the icing on the cake with one big, final, blow out the candles event. Presenting the WMMR 50th finale with Metallica.
MMR is turning 50 years old.
And we are coming back to Philly to celebrate with you guys on October 25th. Obey your master.
WMMR Metallica Rock the Roof off the Wells Fargo Center.
So true, Jackson.
MMR VIP presale Thursday, May 31st, noon to 10 p.m. Keep an eye on your inbox for the password. Not a VIP? Sign up now at WMMR.com. Tickets on sale Friday, June 1st at noon via WellsFargoCenterPhilly.com. The WMMR 50th finale with Metallica. Details at WMMR.com. Happy birthday to us.
Hey, I just saw this story, and I wanted to go ahead and get you guys' impression on this, because this was this is weird, man. This is out of Westfield, New Jersey. I'm not sure where Westfield is.
It's in New Jersey.
Oh!
But a letter came 3 days after a couple purchased a home in the township in June of last year for $1.3 million, a dream house for themselves and their children. And the letter, read part of it read, "Why are you here? I will find out." And that was sent somebody identifying himself as the Watcher.
The Watcher, why are you here? I will find out.
And it goes on to say, my grandfather watched this house in the 1920s, and my father watched it in the 1960s, and now it is my time. And the couple, by the way, who bought this house have filed in Superior Court earlier this month. They're suing the former owners because they believe the owners were receiving letters like this as well, and they didn't disclose that information.
Sure. Yeah, yeah. And that, I believe that would be an actionable issue.
These letters became increasingly disturbing, according to the suit. The Watcher, just days before the closing, the previous homeowners received a letter from him but never disclosed that information, according to the suit. So distressing were the messages that the new owners never moved into their home. And are now trying to sell it without success because potential buyers are scared off after hearing of the messages.
You're my new family. My family.
The letters have a voice.
The couple is also suing the Chicago Title Insurance Company and The Watcher, though no real name or address is mentioned of him.
By the way, in horror movies or anything, when there's a watcher, it's never a benevolent watcher.
Yeah.
I'll protect you.
This is a badass plot line for a movie right now.
Yeah. Well, it is. Yeah. It is countless movies where there's this kind of, sick. I mean, this is would any of these letters, Preston, over the years indicate any malevolent intent?
I don't know. I know they get a little bit disturbing. Yeah. So the Watcher claims the right of possession or ownership or control of the house. In the letters, he refers to the prior owners by name and identifies the house by street address.
Oh, wow.
The names of the current and the previous owners are being withheld by New Jersey Advance Media, along with the address of the house for safety reasons. But he had written, "I am the Watcher, and I have been in control of the house for the better part of 2 decades now."
Damn.
Let me see. It goes into some further details. I haven't had a chance to scan this whole thing as of yet.
Do you think it's a Century 21 dealer looking to get it? A bit on the house. It's this watcher currently says that his father watched the house.
Yeah. And his grandfather.
And his grandfather.
What does that mean?
That means that he's being straight up, and it's a fact that he comes from a long line of
psychos.
Oh, all right. Or he's just trying to create a larger impression that this has been ongoing forever.
Listen to this. The first letter by the Watcher was received June 5th of last year, 3 days after the closing, and it included the statement, "Do you need to fill the house with the young blood I requested?"
Okay, well, that's freaky.
"Once I know their names, I will call to them and draw them to me." "I asked the prior owners to bring me young blood." The letter writer recalls when he ran from room to room imagining the life with the rich occupants there. He said, "And now I watch and wait for the day when the young blood will be mine again."
Okay, bye. See ya.
So
now,
wait,
was there any indication that the prior family knew?
Yes, he said. Yeah. In fact, that's why they're taking them to court, because
they said they believed that they also received the letter. So is there confirmation
I don't know. I'm not sure. I think that's what they're looking into. Let's see. It says a subsequent letter received on June 18th of last year contained references of what might be in the house and veiled threats. He said, "Have they found what is in the walls yet? In time they will. I'm pleased to know your names and the names now of the young blood you have brought to me."
Okay, here, you can have the house.
He said, "Will the young bloods play in the basement? who has the rooms facing
the Youngbloods are a band from the 70s, Preston.
Yeah. Come on, people now. Smile on your brother. Everybody get together.
Is it possible?
Try to love one another right now. That's a pretty positive message.
I think that is actually a beautiful message. Is it possible it's one of the Youngbloods?
No.
I don't know.
That's not what he's doing.
Love is but a song I sing.
Yeah.
So it goes on to say, will the Youngbloods play in the basement?
Yes!
He wants the band to get back together.
We've solved it.
It
might as well be Paper Lace.
Oh, no big deal.
Another Chicago died.
Yeah, the night Chicago died. Man, that's a scary ass thing.
Mm-hmm.
When you are being, and do you think it's, there's no way to know. That's the problem with something like this.
Listen
to
this.
What recourse do they have to finding out who's doing this?
This gets worse. Who has the rooms facing the street? I'll know as soon as you move in. It will help me to know who is in which bedroom. Then I can plan better. For the concert. You know, for the flow of the crowd,
you know,
and whatnot.
Just, everything, encore and all that stuff.
It says, all the windows and door in the house allow me to watch you and track you as you move through the house.
Okay.
And he said, I am in charge of the house.
You couldn't, in your right mind, you can't live there when you're basically getting, regardless of whether this is just simply somebody's sick joke,
yep,
or whether they actually plan to act on the stuff that they're writing, mm-hmm, right mind could take the risk.
No, and I wonder how long the family before them lived there. Because if it was like a quick stint, you know what I mean? They were only there a year or a few years, then they definitely had to be getting the same life.
Check that family's tapes of their Youngbloods concerts.
Right. But all of the families, from the 20s, is that when it started, Preston?
Well, that's when he claimed.
Right.
No way. They don't list an address, right? They just say Westfield?
Yep. They said that they're keeping the address and the family's name.
I mean, I'm assuming Westfield is a slightly more upper middle class.
It's a $1.3 million home.
Yeah, you got to figure there's some bucks there.
It's near Summit. It's a suburb of New York City, so.
Wow.
It's a quality of life issue. If you started getting stuff like that,
I'd move.
You'd have to move.
As much as a colossal pain in the ass moving is, if you've got kids, it's not worth it.
Nope.
Even if it's a joke, you'd have to. You can't live your life. I told you, and this is akin to the television show Stalkers, where they actually follow real cases and have video of actual stalkers.
Scary.
And they've treated their their victims. It's terrifying. You're miserable. You can't live a life.
There was a guy, and I would watch him all the time in front of this other house. And I'd be in my van watching this guy, and he'd be like, this guy has no life. And I'm like, sitting there, and I've got my mouse skeletons on the dashboard, and I'm playing with them, and I'm thinking, dude, do you ever go home?
This guy.
I mean, not judging.
No life. Oh, no. Come on.
Yeah.
Come on.
The concert's starting.
I love another right now.
I love this song, by the way.
It is a great
song. I love
song.
The long guitar part.
Yeah. Let's hear what part this goes into. Some may go.
You will surely pay. There's only been one murder in Westfield, New Jersey since 2000, so...
Well, play the odds.
Yeah.
Kids, it's like 50-50. What do you say? And besides, we're going to get a free Youngbloods concert out of it.
Yeah, right? So keep that in mind. Everybody will be happy. That
would be the...
Yeah. Come on, people down. Yeah. Smile on your brother. Everybody get together. Gotta love one another right now.
Right now.
Far out.
You could know. It's
terrifying.
You could have an incident occur, and then if something did, and you just said, this is just somebody doing this, there's no way to go back once something happens.
Yep. All right, on to a happier topic, if you will.
I'm scared now.
Don't be scared.
I am scared.
Don't, please.
I'm scared.
Hopefully they'll track this sicko down.
How scared.
No, this...
How scared.
This sounds fun. It's a place called Camp Throwback. This was launched last year in Clarksville, Ohio. And a woman named Brittany Gibbons started this, and it was inspired by the summers of her childhood.
So is this?
It's an adult summer camp with no kids, lots of booze, and a little bit of sleeping around going on.
That sounds awesome.
Doesn't it?
I bet you this was inspired by the movie Grown Ups.
It's a co-ed sleepaway camp. And apparently, I guess there are a few of them that are popping up.
I never went to summer camp. I just there was too much television, as I said before, to watch. But
right,
you know, something like this with the right friends might be a blast.
Yeah, and it says at Camp Throwback, you do everything you did as, at camp as a kid. Campers make friendship bracelets. They complete a watermelon eating contest. They chow down in the mess hall. They play all kinds of games. But unlike kid camps, the fun rises to a higher level. Booze flows and good times fill the air at nightly parties.
Is there wife swapping?
No. I think it's mainly for single people.
Okay.
But it might not be. It says there are games, costumes, and even a little naughty behavior.
Ooh.
She said that you'd think that once you reach a certain age, you'd be an adult. But something about camp brings you right back to that 15-year-old debauchery.
Here's your cabin mate. He goes by the name Watcher.
they do hangover yoga every morning.
Yeah, they do. They do drunk field day and hangover yoga. But with archery, you have to be sober.
That's yeah, that makes sense.
And you know what I also like, too, is the main rule, the number one rule, is you can't ask anybody about what they do for a living.
That's great.
No work talk allowed.
It's like Wayward Pines.
Yeah.
Don't talk about your past.
That's it's right. Often the first question people ask somebody
what do you
else.
Do? Yeah.
And sometimes it's not necessary to chat about that.
Yeah, or it just starts to lead down a path sometimes you just don't even care about. How about looking into other things?
I'm tour manager for the Young Bloods.
I write letters.
The basement tour.
That's right.
Yeah. I actually thought about doing something similar to this, but more of a college theme. And Nick and Kathy, my idea would be to, like, we had a fraternity house, but our fraternity house was on campus. Would you ever do that, go back to and live in your fraternity house with your fraternity brothers for a weekend?
Oh, I would love it.
Yeah, absolutely. Right? Yeah. And this honestly, this camp sounds like college without classes.
Right. More like old school.
Yeah.
Like a hybrid.
Yeah, we will serve no purpose whatsoever and give nothing back to the community.
I just can't recover as easily as I did back then.
Right. But sleep in old dorm beds and all that. Like, because,
Kathy,
you know,
a night after a raucous thing, Kathy would wake up with her Tupperware tub full of different colored fruit and, like, this, my melon, I have to have this. Cantaloupe.
But wait a minute, Casey. So are you saying, like, your brothers and sisters, the ones that you went to school with, you all get together? Not with strangers, but with
yeah. So, like, people, my roommate would be Kyle, and George would live next door with John.
That would be hard to organize.
It would. Well, you would have to figure out, okay, like, because
everybody would have to find a time when it's convenient. Everybody would have to be into it. Yeah,
it would have
your equivalent though. You're in the same boat I am. I didn't go. I wasn't part of a frat. So the summer camp thing would make more sense. But if you could. You actually got your band back together for your wedding.
Yeah, my wife did. Yeah, that was pretty cool. But I would love to. Yeah, there was talk. We used to do an annual thing. We used to go on what we called float trips, which are canoe, you know, down the river things with my old crew. And somebody floated out on Facebook, you know, last year. Well, let's do it again. Let's all get together. And hey, it sounds like a great idea, but you just never get around to doing it.
You have to put it on the calendar months and months in advance.
Somebody's got to be a point person make people do it.
And that's what we did this past fall, and it was a mini fraternity reunion. We rented a house in the Poconos, and it was great, and there were, I don't know, a dozen guys or something like that. But one guy, Matt, took care of all of the planning. And
you need that guy.
If he hadn't been there, it wouldn't have come together.
Because it'll be a case of, we'll get together then. Son,
you know we'll have a good time
then.
That is true. But I would love to do that, man. I mean, I'm doing kind of a version of it with my son next week. We're going to Wyoming. Mm-hmm. We're going to a dude ranch. We're going to horseback riding and fishing and floating and all that stuff. And that's
dad.
So much fun.
It's good to make bonding moments. Like your own dad did that with you. Pacific Coast.
Yeah, that's why I'm doing it with my sons now and my daughter when she eventually turns 13.
To go bond that way. Is he really excited?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, most definitely.
I booked a flight to Colorado last night to take my son out. I'm you know, sort of following in your footsteps of what you did with your son last year, Preston.
He's going to be watching you.
I'm going to be watching you, yeah. No, but I was going to bring up this camp idea. There's a camp called Taqua that Marissa and I have mentioned a few times.
Never heard of it.
They do It's like fish.
Oh,
yeah. But they do family camp weekends, and they do that in like Memorial Day weekend and later in the summer. Now, this isn't like what you're talking about. It's not adults only, but you can go with your kids, and they can go off, do camp stuff during the day, and you can hang out with your wife, do adult
sex.
Stuff. Sex.
Yeah.
Mostly sex.
Let's do sex.
Yeah. Do sex. You Borat.
That's a great scene.
And, do sex with me.
I always thought if I went away to camp, it was going to be like the Parent Trap, and I'd find like my long-lost sister.
Now, who are your Indian pretend... Haji and...
No, Jatna and Keetna, and then... Oh, I always forget the other two.
How come? Yeah, write them down.
I will.
I'd be down with doing this, man. I think this would be a lot of fun. Now, the question is if I would go without a group of friends, if I would just go and
let's
see who we meet and see if we can find some people to have fun with. I'm not that way as much as I used to be anymore. Now I just like to hang out with people I already know, and you know what I mean?
Yeah. You don't have much time left. No. And so you want to make sure you maximize.
With people who I know I get along with. Yeah, Maris?
You're killing me, Nick, because now I want to like go water skiing and sailing and do jewelry and do arts and crafts.
Did you do archery?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, because you could do archery and then you could do riflery.
Right, with a 22.
When you're a Navajo.
We're going to be doing that next week. We're going to be doing some rifle shooting and hatchet throwing, which I'm very much looking forward to.
Do we have that video up on PrestonSteve.com? They tried a little hatchet throwing on Fox and Friends. And it didn't work out too well.
No. Somebody took an axe to the arm.
Yeah, through the
ips.
Right over the target.
Yeah, but this involves... This camp throwback.
Where is it?
It is in Clarksville, Ohio, but it says that they've also opened them up. Hang on just a second. I got to scan ahead. In Chicago, Los Angeles, Nashville, and upstate New York. Hey, upstate New York.
It's got to be. Listen, this area. Get set up one in the Poconos.
But on Drunk Field Day, and that's literally what it's called, Drunk Field Day, about a dozen 10-person cabins compete in dodgeball, watermelon eating, and three-legged races. Drinking, which is optional, makes it a bit more adult, she said. This is the creator. She said, everybody expects that you would kind of get there and go nuts. She said, that happens with one or two people. But other than that, people are just excited to escape the real world they pretty much live in and just act pretty chill.
You know what? Does this, like the Philadelphia sports clubs, see those things. It's sort of like a social thing tied to athletic. I mean, they seem to be really popular.
Yeah, there's flag football and
football
a bunch of leagues and stuff. What's that?
Kickball, volleyball, yeah.
The only downside with that I see those organizations is sometimes you get with a group that is uber competitive and not as much fun. You know what I mean?
They don't get it.
You have some really serious people as opposed to ones who would like to win but have a good time doing it, you know? So I don't know. Marissa?
Yeah, that's why they do different categories. They do the people that are serious and then there's just like the fun leagues.
They do?
So they actually delineate?
A-holes and fun people.
Yeah.
Those are the names of the groups.
Because you're right. That's exactly what... Come on, dude! Yeah. Come on! Bring it! Come on!
I used to play flag football on Saturday mornings, and there would always be a couple of girls, because you'd always need females on your team, because you would have, 10 guys and 2 girls, and you need, 2 or 3 girls in the field.
We played on the same team for a while.
Oh, that's
right. But we played... I played the non-competitive, and then when you guys switched over to competitive, I was like, uh-uh.
Yeah.
I'm out.
Come on!
It was hard to wake it up on Saturday mornings and being competitive, but there'd always be girls who would walk around with bags of t-shirts of every color. So, if the red team needed a girl and the blue team needed a girl, she would just, change t-shirts and play for every team. Because you
play topless.
Yeah, if you have nothing to do on a Saturday morning and you're kind of bored, you just stay there all day and drink and play football.
Okay. You can drink. Where did this take place?
Fairmount Park, where you are allowed, parts of Fairmount Park, you're allowed
you can drink.
To have alcohol.
Yeah. Okay.
The place called the Plateau is where everybody go.
Oh, yeah. Oh,
of course. I think only in the summertime.
That's right.
It's where everybody go.
Come on, people, now.
No, what a dick.
Smile on your brother.
And on the weekends...
Oh.
Well, now you have to play the rest of it.
Travel to Capital City and watch your ladies while they make a toilet.
Now here you
go. I was going to play the Young Bloods. A little more inspiring. Smile on your brother, everybody gets all right. Try to
love one another. Right now.
Bore out into the Young Bloods.
And then we're going to play The Last Train in Clarksville. Why?
Because that was in Clarksville, Ohio.
He writes, Dear Casey, can you play a clip from Borat, The Youngbloods, and The Monkees? You can lean here by
There's a whole bunch of things going on behind the scenes here. You guys were talking about making sex.
Yes.
So I found.
So whether you're a Monkees fan, a Youngbloods fan, or a Monkees fan again.
Yeah. Wow. Okay. I think we should take a break.
Yeah.
The Preston and Steve Show on 93.3 WMMR. Like the podcast, you'll also love it live when you can call in. Weekdays from 6 a.m. to about 10:30 a.m. on the radio at 93.3 WMMR. Or stream the show live via MMR's mobile app. Now, bizarre. WMMR presents bizarre. Preston and Steve's Bizarre File.
And the Bizarre File this morning is brought to you by Armor Metals and Recycling. Do you want more cash in your pocket today? Armor Metals plays top dollar. I got to turn that down there. Pays top dollar for all metals, wires, motors, computers, and more. 8300 National Highway in Pennsauken, New Jersey. Or you can give them a call, 856-665-5715.
This is a cute one, okay? 21-year-old Shelby Hennick of California knew that she had to do something when her mother Donna got sick and was confined at the hospital. Hennick decided to sneak in Donna's 12-year-old dog, Patsy. Now, when carried over her shoulder, Patsy looks like a newborn baby who is napping or nursing with his mom. So she was able to sneak the dog in.
Wow.
Hennick told BuzzFeed News that she played it cool when strolling into the hospital and simply walked by and waved at the staff before heading to Donna's room, and nobody noticed that it was a dog. Hennick posted about the situation on Twitter, and many praised her effort, but some said she might be putting others in the hospital at risk if they're allergic, if they have a reaction because they are there because they're sick. So,
well, the dog did pee on an incubator and someone passed away, but otherwise,
it's adorable.
Yeah.
You may want to give Dracula's castle a wide berth. The AP reports that the historic Pinari Castle in Romania was closed to tourists late last month for safety reasons for visitors. Apparently, tourists climbing the nearly 1,500 steps to the castle that once belonged to Vlad the Impaler were having close calls with bears, a mama bear and her three cubs.
Oh, the worst kind, vampire bears.
To be more specific, could you imagine?
Bear. You've made the big mistake today.
Romania is home to about 6,000 brown bears.
Welcome to the castle.
And actually, that accounts for approximately 60% of the entire bear population in Europe.
Wow. So they're all centralized to this area.
Yeah.
I've seen this castle. It looks like something you'd sort of have to get inside and get it because it looks so classically horror movie-ish.
Yeah.
I mean, and obviously the history attached to it is amazing. But now the bears, well, they add a certain danger factor.
Exactly. Let's see. Three people are facing disorderly conduct charges for engaging in sex on the roof of a building in Lancaster. It happened Saturday morning. Someone called in a complaint to Lancaster County Regional Police. Summons for disorderly conduct were filed to Amanda Howley, Joel T. Beggar, and Kevin Vundbro.
So it was a threesome on the roof.
Yeah, the witnesses told police that three people were on the roof of an adjacent building engaging in sexual activity.
Visible to the other buildings.
Patrol officers investigating the incident met with the accused who admitted that they were getting freaky, but they thought that their position was private and out of sight.
No.
And they were charged with disorderly conduct. So they were on the roof in Lancaster.
What's a bigger achievement? The roof sex or the full-blown intercourse in your seat of a moving airliner?
Oh, the plane.
The plane, yeah.
Just because of the close proximity of people. Roof is pretty good. Pulling that one off is pretty solid, though. That's younger. We're looking at pictures of them.
Yeah.
They're looking like they're in...
a threesome.
Yeah, 24, roughly in their 20s, yeah.
I always question the dude who doesn't mind being with another dude in a threesome.
I know some guys who have.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
I don't know. It's just not my thing.
Yeah, I don't get that either.
I think the breakdown, I prefer the two girls, one guy scenario.
Sometimes you don't get that option.
I know. Yeah. And the worst for me, and God bless you if it's you, all guys, that's an issue. For me.
In Kansas City, Missouri, a fight on a bus Saturday night ended with one person being stabbed and both men going through the bus windshield. I mean, like crashing all
Holy
the way
crap.
Through. Yeah. Surveillance video shows a woman who was sitting across the aisle from the men take two small children to a rear exit of the bus as the men continued scuffling next to the driver. They crashed into the front windshield, shattering it, and at one point, both of them were hanging out of the front of the bus as one of them held a knife. Police said that one person was stabbed. They haven't announced any arrests yet, but it was pretty wild looking. Well, a bullet case has chillingly been discovered inside an avocado bought at a supermarket.
Even produce isn't safe from drive-bys.
It is not immediately clear where exactly the avocado was purchased, but the Reddit post indicates it was bought at a farmer's market somewhere in the United States. The post caption reads, "My friend found a bullet in an avocado that she bought from Sprouts." On the picture, a lab analyst commented that finding bullets in food was an incredibly common occurrence.
Is it?
Many followers of the post on Reddit have speculated about what kind of bullet it is, but it comes 2 years after farmers were forced to offer $500,000 for information leading to the convictions after pins and nails were discovered in potatoes on Prince Edward Island.
Do you ever go avocado shooting?
No, I haven't been avocado shooting.
It's a blast. Yeah.
They launch them up there for you. That would be awesome. One farmer dubbed the incident food terrorism. In a separate incident, a woman... Do that again.
Oh, I got another one.
All right, ready? Okay. All right.
All right, one more time.
All right.
That's avocado shooting.
Yeah, and it's
it obliterates.
It rains guacamole.
Yeah, yeah. Hallelujah.
Yeah. So in a separate incident, a woman named only as Akuza claimed to have found a penis in her dinner.
Waiter, there's a penis in my soup.
She told the local news outlet in Ghana that she had bought the food item from a chop house in Accra, Ghana.
How do you like your penis?
That's all I have on that particular story. Oh, I got to wrap it up.
Well, the penis trumps the avocado, I got to tell you.
Yeah, you know what? That's probably a good one to end on there. And that is what I have for you this morning in the Bizarre File.
This 93.3 WMMR audio on demand program returns after a brief word from our sponsors.
Hey, it's Preston. Listen, when I want to relax, I go to Hand & Stone Massage Facial Spa. Listen, whether you want a rejuvenating massage or refreshing facial, Hand & Stone is the place to go. Introductory massages or facials start at just $59.95. Visit handandstone.com or one of their 50 locations in the Delaware Valley. Restrictions apply. See spa for details.
Are you ready for love? If so, Stephen makes it easy, handpicking diamonds to create a stunning engagement ring that's guaranteed to take her breath away. Stephen Singer Jewelers, real love experts at the other corner of 8th and Walnut, or IHateStephenSinger.com.
This is the Preston and Steve Show podcast.
I saw a really interesting article of something I had never really heard anybody say about themselves before. There are some people that genuinely do not like music. Have you ever met anyone in your life that doesn't like music? I'm not talking about like country music or rock or hip hop or anything. I mean, music.
Any music?
Years ago, we had talked about something and I remember somebody calling in and I think we were all aghast at the notion. And this person just said they don't like music.
Yeah.
Which to me... It's like you can't find one style or some kind of music you don't like.
There has to be something that gets you to bob your head
something. You know what I mean? I think it has an infectious... You go back to... I mean, even the frigging cavemen
I think it's human nature.
Right.
Yeah. Even if like soothing music that they play in an elevator or... if you're getting a massage, like at a spa or something, there has to be some sort of music that you enjoy.
Or maybe those people like to just get massages in complete silence
without listening to the comforting sounds of the Wyndham Hill Collection and Zamfir, master of the pan flute.
Well, I do have a friend of mine. I'm pretty sure she says she doesn't like music because when we first became friends, because
she likes pudding.
Her kids and my kids go to school together, and she would tell me that she didn't listen to the show.
Right.
But I'm pretty sure she says she doesn't listen to anything when she drives in a car because she doesn't like music. And I'm like, to me, that's weird. So I'm like, you just drive in total silence? Like,
yeah, I know there are people that prefer talk, you know.
Thank God.
When they're in the car. I know.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
But to have absolutely nothing at all.
Nothing.
I think that's, I mean, I will from time to time turn off the radio altogether just to center and
that's not the norm.
Zone out for a moment. No, it's not the norm.
So he's a kid, but I can't have the radio on in my car if Jace is in the car with me. He does not like the radio on. He doesn't like music. He never did. Doesn't like kids' songs.
Whoa.
Really? Nothing.
Just complete silence? What kind of creepy shining thing is going on there?
There's no silence. Trust me. We're talking.
Oh, are you?
And
really?
Talking and really? Talking and talking the entire time. But
just
no,
keep
ever,
driving, mother.
Ever since he was little, the only music that he liked was to any TV shows that came on. Like if it was Sesame Street or whatever it was, when he would hear the song, he would bounce a little bit and bob his head. So I don't think that he doesn't like music, but
he likes TV themes. I think Jason and I would get along.
Yeah, I think you guys,
I really do.
You also know his love of Iron Man and video games.
And gadgets. I think I've actually found my son.
Yeah. That's funny because my kids, as soon as we get in the car, the requests start, you know.
Well, I remember you always talking about how your kids liked, not necessarily kids' music, but you would play like Coldplay for them or whatever. I even had those CDs for him, like the little kid, you know, the little kid music of, Coldplay and we had the Beatles and we had a bunch of them and he just was never
into it. It kills me though because, there's a whole series of CDs that when the mother's pregnant, you play it for the baby in the womb, and it's to me it just seems such an intrinsic part of the human condition to be responsive to music or some sort of syncopation, something.
Here's a text that says, "My grandfather hates all forms of music. He never even turns on the radio. We will drive in silence for hours, or he will drive in silence for hours.
I regret ever having sex. I regret this family. I want to die."
Did you say something?
Let me go to Brandon. Hi, Brandon. Good morning.
Hey, good morning, guys. Hey, bitches.
Hey, what? What's up, Brandon?
Not too much, man. My last boss absolutely despised music in any form.
Wow.
Anyway, he'd had all these expensive cars, Bentleys and things like that. Never, ever turn a radio on with the nicest sound systems in the world. And in the back, when we always worked in the warehouse, we'd always crank the music way up to try and keep him out. And then, sure enough, if he would come in the back to see what we were up to, first thing he'd do, go over, turn the music all the way off.
Did you?
He absolutely hated it.
Did you ever ask? Was it simply he didn't like the distraction, or there was no music, no artist, no nothing, no style at all that it interested him or pleased him?
No, he absolutely hated everything. All he would do is sit in his office all day and watch, like, you know, CNN and different things like that. If we had the music up or anything, that was his mission, to come back and just try to make conversation.
I don't get it.
There's a scientific explanation, which I'll get to. Okay. I just wanted to hear from some people first, but I'll explain it in a moment.
But just think about how music enhances so many different things. You think about a movie and how music is made to enhance a scene, the emotions of a scene. Of a movie, you can watch.
Oh, I was watching yesterday, Unbreakable, M. Night Shyamalan.
Yes,
there's a scene where Bruce Willis goes to, he tells him, go where people are. And, you know, that's where he can kind of sense.
He's starting to pick up his abilities.
And there was a case, I made note of the music. It was this very tense.
Yeah.
It really filled out the scene and made it work. And I was thinking of that very thing yesterday, that it can accompany and create emotion.
Yeah.
And you've seen. Yeah. And you've seen the fake trailers they've set up.
Yeah, yeah.
Where they take a horror film and turn it into a delightful family.
Yeah.
It's mainly because of the music that's played.
Right. I actually watched The Sunrise a lot this summer when I was down the shore. And I would say maybe half the time I would play Here Comes the Sun from the Beatles. To me, it just sort of, and you know, you think
on your didgeridoo.
No, I have my phone with me. But I just thought it sort of enhanced the moment.
I'm going to go to Nick. Hey, Nick, good morning.
Ahoy there, Captain Blackfinger.
Captain Blackfinger.
What's up, matey?
We got a new moniker. Uh-huh.
So I used to date a girl who hated music. I played every type of music imaginable, classic rock. I even tried, like, legitimately opera, like, pan, everything. Nothing worked. And, like, it got really awkward because I would be driving, because she didn't have a car at the time, like, I would be driving, and I would have to force conversation, and it made the whole relationship awkward, and it only lasted for, like, 2 months.
I love my wife dearly, and we talk about all sorts of things, but on a long car ride, that we shut up and play music.
Nick, so I guess did you ever ask if she wanted to go to a concert, or was that completely out of the question?
completely out of the question.
Mime concerts.
Okay. All right. Thanks, Nick. I appreciate it.
I tell you what, the notion is so alien because I can find even styles of music that I hate. I can find something. Each of those that I can say, okay, maybe that.
Over Silence.
Yeah.
My wife and I, when we were driving back from Atlantic City, we listened to that. Actually, driving there and driving back, we listened to that first Steel Panther album, and we were just cracking up.
And that's
so much fun.
So there's humor. Yeah. Right? So doesn't Triumph have the definitive word about the power of music?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. The magic power.
The magic power. Steel Panther.
Death to all but metal. But here you go. Oh, here we go. Chuck, where are you? Chuck is my buddy, my Triumph buddy.
I've been on a Triumph.
Have you been on a kick lately?
Yeah. I've always loved Triumph. I had the greatest hits. My Dodge Dart.
Here we go. Something's at the edge of your mind. You
don't know what it is. Something I love this. You
were it's all about music, man. Yeah. Not sure. But some people don't get it. Hang on. Then you hear the music and it all
comes crystal clear.
Steve, I see myself with long flowing hair on the back of a white horse. I'm wild and I'm free.
You want to hear something?
Riding shirtless through a meadow.
I see you that way too.
Thank you. Music
in me. Come on! No music?
Yeah, all right.
Do you not know what Triumph is trying to tell us all?
Let me go to a couple more calls. I will go to Anthony, not a fan of music. Hey, Anthony, good morning.
Hey, how you doing, guys?
Good. What's up, man?
All right, so I like music. And, you know, I like, you know, Nirvana, Pearl Jam, and all that stuff.
So you like music?
Yeah, I do. It's just some days at work, I'm just on mute for music. And I'm a truck driver, and, you know, not having the radio on kind of helps when you're driving. And I'll go 13, you know, 14 hours a day not listening to music.
So what?
I tell my friend.
Do you listen to talk, or do you just have complete silence, or just the sound of the truck?
Just the sound of the truck. Sometimes, you know, maybe talk, but not really.
Wow.
Huh. I told my friends this before, you know, going 13 hours without radio, and they said, dude, that's crazy. I can't go that long without music.
If you want to, though, go to that area where it's virtually unlistenable. Go to any AM station on Sunday morning.
I have this rash just below my kneecap, and there's an ointment I purchased. Well, it's for people 70 and up.
Researchers from Ars Technica have scanned the brains of people who dislike music. They found that they had lower blood flow to the brains. Reward networks.
And they're all Nazis.
When exposed to music. And this suggests that they may have less functional connectivity between the auditory processing and reward centers of the brain.
So there might actually be a medical condition that causes you not to like music.
Participants who experienced the most pleasure from listening to music were found to have enhanced connectivity between these parts of the brain.
Is it possible to get the power of music in you?
Yes. We've learned nothing from Triumph. It's a magic power.
Yes.
So, all right. With that said, then there are some people who feel the music more.
Yes.
Okay.
Yep, absolutely. Who definitely have more of an emotional connection to it because of their physical makeup.
That is pretty wild. Yeah. I would not, I would have thought it's just, maybe just something more ephemeral, that it was just, okay, some people like it, some people don't, but there's an actual biological reason.
Yeah. And sometimes I just have to listen to the music.
Thank you, Casey.
You're welcome.
What would you expect to pay for this amazing season?
Now, music is such a huge part of my life, always has been, especially my adolescence. And music can make me excited, happy. It can actually make me cry on occasion.
You were just Ensign Blackfingers at that time.
I was Ensign Blackfinger. I wasn't captain yet. But we were just talking about how the other day a song changed my life.
And we
got lots of calls on that. But to some people, it doesn't speak to them at all.
Do you know what I call it?
For me, not like that.
No?
Like, there was never a song that changed my life. Not that I'm not saying that as if there's something wrong with it.
Right.
Just for me, that's
it just never
not
happened to
I enjoy music. I mean, there are certain activities that I can't do without music. But
It's never changed my life.
I think you were scarred because they didn't let you into select choir when you were.
Really think so.
Yeah,
I really think that's what it was.
Completely tone deaf. I think she has that physical malady that makes her unable to recognize music in even its most primal forms. She's very nasty too.
I'm gonna go to Fred. Hey, Fred. Good morning.
Good morning.
Hey, what's up, Fred?
Not much.
All right, what do you want to share with us, Fred? Come on.
Yeah, I just find it annoying as hell. I hate the radio. I hate the music, all kinds of music.
I hate you guys.
Elevator.
Terrible.
Terrible.
Hey, Fred, you absolutely, when you're commuting or whatever, I mean, I obviously talk, I think you're, I would assume you're okay with, but there's no music at all that provides any comfort, solace,
not
energy,
at all. I don't even turn my radio on.
Wow, not to those sweet sounds.
Hey, Fred, have you always been this way since you were a kid?
My brother and my dad drove me to a Green Day concert, and I wore earplugs the whole time.
Yeah.
Wow.
So you've been this way your whole life?
Oh yeah.
Does that cause issues with when you're in relationships with, you know, people?
Yeah, all the girls, they love the music and everything. They always put my radio on. I'm just like, oh, God, get out of my truck.
Wow.
So you need someone who doesn't like music.
Well, I don't care if you like music. I mean, it's
Marley Maitland.
Whatever you want.
So, Fred, what is it you're into then? What's, because, you know.
Butt stuff.
Like, how did you find us?
Well, because I'm at work and, you know, they listen to radio and stuff and I stay overtime and stuff and I turn that thing right off.
Okay, so when they leave you, you like silence.
Yeah, silence.
Do you find that when you're in silence, you get contemplative? Did your mind race?
No, zen, complete zen.
Okay. Zen or zone?
Zen.
I think this is
so
zen.
That's soothing to him. Quiet is soothing to him. You don't like the excess noise.
I wish I was deaf sometimes.
Really?
you can do it, Fred.
Yes, I mean, I'd like to be deaf.
Good Lord!
Can you do that medical procedure?
No.
Wow. So you actually you. It's not just a. I don't care for it. You hate it.
Oh yeah. Oh,
it's noise to you.
Well. You could have a biological condition, as you're pointing out now, Preston, that makes that unappealing to you.
Yeah, I guess that's okay.
Fred, do you like having conversations with people?
I do.
Okay.
All right, so you're okay with some sound.
I think
you would like scat singing.
No, I think I'm going to do something that's going to bring him around.
Yeah. Okay. Oh, do you have your stuff ready?
Fred, are you ready?
Oh, I got to go back to work.
No, here we go.
Come on, shake your body, baby, do that gong. I know you can't control yourself any longer.
Come on, shake your body, baby, do that gong. I know you can't control yourself any longer. Come on, shake your body, baby, do that gong. I know you can't control yourself any longer.
Oh, my God.
Wow, Kathy was extraordinary on that one.
I don't know how you can get worse on a kazoo, but you made it possible.
Fred, are you there?
He shot himself. I don't know if you heard it.
Dear God. Let me go to... I'm going to go to Tom. Hey, Tom, good morning.
Hey, sorry about bothering you guys at work.
It's okay.
What's up, man?
Hey, guys. I used to work at a top 40 radio station, the local one here in Philadelphia.
Okay.
And I got burnt out on music. Every 90 minutes, the same song.
Yeah,
over.
Honestly, I've worked at Top 40 with tight rotations, and yeah, it definitely. People who listen to the radio think you hear the songs a lot. Where do you work at a radio station?
Oh, it's nonstop. Plus, I worked at DJing at a club at the nighttime, and on the weekends I would do weddings. So music became 24/7 for me, and it just became nonstop. And I honestly, even right now, I don't do that much anymore, but I cannot listen to the radio. I can't listen to songs. It's got to be just talk. That's why I like listening to you guys. But even when a song comes on, I kind of tune out a little bit.
Well, you've understandably gotten burned out on a lot of it. And I worked at a station. Actually, Man About Town was working at the station years ago, Bill West in Q104 in New York. And they had, I think... like 110 songs, Preston, in rotation. Wow. I mean, it was, you could set your clock by the time a song played, and I got burned out on all that stuff. It's just, I can understand that, but having all music, I mean, is there some music that still rocks your world?
A little bit, you know, I mean, I'm starting to come back around a little bit because I don't DJ during the week anymore, and it's starting to come back a little bit, but honestly, on the weekends, I do weddings, and I play the same song most of the time.
You needed a break.
I do need a break. It's getting a little too much.
It's wild how a song, you could love a song,
thanks,
and
Tom,
then hear it so many times that you actually hate it. And I heard a song.
Oh, yeah,
I heard a song on Saturday night that was the song when I first started in radio in 1997, or, you know, around 98. It was a Tub. It's
I just can't listen to that anymore.
But do you remember how much you loved Tub Thumping when it first came out?
Oh, my God.
How great was that song?
I get knocked down, and I get up again. You're never going to keep me down.
Chumbawamba.
But that was the song. That was, I mean, it played, and we weren't at a top 40 radio station, but man, did it played every hour or two.
Constantly. Mm-hmm. Berlin, Steal My Sunshine.
I fall in and out of love with songs. There were songs that I've heard it enough times. And then it'll come along at the right time.
Hi, how you doing?
Yeah, hey.
Hey.
How you been?
I'm back.
Where did we go wrong?
Come here.
Yeah.
Where did we go wrong?
And then I will.
Good to see you, Chumbawamba.
Yeah, we had some good times.
Yeah.
Well, sometimes I will listen to it with a different perspective and try to pick up on things that I've never heard before. Listen to specifically the bass line or the harmonies in that particular part of this song. And then I can appreciate it again, and I do like that.
There are some songs that transcend that you never grow tired of. And do you ever have drives where you will listen to the same song like 30 times in a row?
I have.
And then you start to pick up different. Yeah, you can learn different elements of a song that make it more interesting to you.
Yeah.
I will appreciate the harmony or the bass, or the Beatles always present an array of options when you're listening to that stuff.
Yep. Here's Tech says, I'm a huge fan of your show, but I prefer to podcast because that way I don't have to listen to the music. And I always skip over in-studio musical guests.
Mm-hmm. Huh.
I listen to talk radio in the car. I feel like Fred. It's just annoying noise that interferes with my thought process. I have a PhD in molecular and cell biology and genetics from Drexel.
So do I.
So maybe my brain has only so much space.
Well, no, but that very well might be the case with him.
You know what's also funny is music, like comedy, it's just supposed, it's meant to bring joy.
Yeah.
But the wrong music or the wrong comedy does the exact opposite.
Music can get you pissed off.
Mm-hmm.
Hitler started as a comedian. I was taken the wrong way.
He did stand up.
Yeah, he did stand up. Yeah.
I had no idea.
I've tried to make jokes on this show, and it's gone the opposite. You guys have gotten mad at me for. I'm like, I'm just trying to make you laugh, guys.
Well, because they have to be funny.
I know.
You smelly whore.
That was pretty good yesterday.
Thank you.
All right, let me go to Ryan. Let's tell us of his grandfather. Hey, Ryan, good morning.
Hey, good morning, guys. What's going on?
Hey, man. So, what's the story about your grandfather?
What's that?
Working at Wegmans.
Okay. I can barely understand you, Ryan. Can you get your mouth closer to the...
No. Sorry, yeah.
So, hey! All right, go ahead.
He started working at Wegmans, and he heard one song, so he played an app, figured out what it was, went home and downloaded it. So now he has one song saved on his iPhone. It's his ringtone. You guys want to guess what it is?
Wait, can I guess? I want to guess.
When did he stumble across this song?
Probably like 4 years ago.
And was it new at the time?
Not really.
All right. We're going to need a hint of some sort.
Can I make a guess right off
You'll
the bat?
You'll never guess it.
Right. I was going to guess Red Solo Cup.
At Wegmans?
Wow.
Wegmans.
Wait, give us a hint, Ryan.
It starts in my toes.
Starts with your toes. Footloose?
Bubbly.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
What is it?
Are you serious?
I don't know that.
Starts in my toes and a crick of my nose.
I've never heard this.
Yes, you have.
Yes, you have.
Can you count me in?
Can
I've been here for a while now. You got me feeling like a child now. She's really hot,
by
the way.
Who sings that?
Kobe Clate?
Yeah.
Starts in my nose and a ting on my toes.
So that's the one song?
It is this really saccharine, happy,
really
I'm in love type of song. That's funny. And that's your grandfather's song, Ryan. The only song he likes.
And it's the only song. He's got like the he got the iPhone with like all the space in the world. He could hold like thousands of songs and he has one.
Here we go. This is for your grandpa. You don't know the song, Steve?
Not really, no.
Make me smile, please stay for a while now. Just take your time.
She is cute.
She's hot.
The rain is falling on my window pane. We are hiding in a safer place. Undercover, staying dry and warm. You give me feelings that
it's very lovey dovey.
I
like the video.
Make me crinkle my nose wherever it goes.
All right. Come on, sing
Come
it.
Come on, sing
voice
it.
The voice
golden
of an angel.
Voice, the Shirley Bassey of the President Steve Show.
Let me have my select choir.
And it starts in my toes. Tickle my nose.
Hey, I still enjoy it.
Yeah.
Hey, that's right, man. As long as you're happy.
It's not judgmental music.
That's right.
Unless you stink.
I'm going to go to you, smelly whore.
Smelly whore.
All right. Hi, Jennifer. Good morning.
Good morning. Gadzooks, guys.
Gadzooks. Jennifer, what's up?
Well, I wanted to let you know, when I was a senior in high school, I actually got diagnosed with something. It's called a central auditory processing dysfunction.
Oh.
And there's a whole bunch of symptoms, but one of the symptoms is an absolute distaste for music.
Wow. So it's not just, I'm not a music fan. It's, this bothers me.
Yeah, and thankfully, I didn't get that symptom, but it's one of the most prominent ones, so I was very fortunate. But, yeah, there's something about the way your brain processes sound. You can have, you may have difficulty hearing in really busy rooms, if there's too many people talking or there's too many things going on.
That's me.
You don't have an auditory memory, if somebody's telling you something, you don't remember you had that conversation. And the distaste for music is a part of it. So if there are people out there who actually have a distaste for music, they might want to get it checked out and see if they have it.
Do you think, to the best of your knowledge, is it something that could be corrected?
No, there really isn't any way to fix it because, it's in the name. It's a processing disorder. It's the way that your brain functions, and it doesn't, you can hear okay, but when it hits your ear, the brain doesn't process it correctly, and all kinds of crazy things can happen.
Can't they drive electrodes into your skull and flood your head with high-powered electricity?
That would be great. If it would help me remember that I had a conversation with my boss, I would do that.
Right. But, so you
can... Wow, so that's the effect it has on you is kind of a memory.
Yeah,
issues.
Unfortunately, I have to write everything down. I don't remember auditory conversations. But, it's funny. I'm actually a classical singer, so I have to, listen to music quite a bit so that I can remember it.
That's very interesting that you are just a shade away from having the inability to appreciate music at all, and you are now a classical singer.
Mm-hmm.
Huh. All right, thanks, Jennifer.
Crazy.
Appreciate it.
Bye, guys.
All right,
Bye.
See you later. Wow. Let me go next to Kenny. Hey, Kenny.
Hey, you guys rock.
Thanks, man. What's up, buddy?
Hey, so I have a boss that when he's in the office, he puts on like Pandora or Spotify. But
yeah.
He always plays movie theme songs, and that's it.
I'm a big fan of songs from
Rambo.
From Rambo, yeah. because I do love movie soundtracks. He just plays songs from movies.
No, like you'll have the Star Wars theme play over and over, or
Lord of
the Rings over and over.
So wow.
Multiple times. And I've never heard him listen to anything else other than the movie theme.
Well, at least he does like music.
Yeah, that's definitely, he maybe enjoys more classical.
To be honest, there was a good stretch where I was listening to a lot of movie soundtrack before VCRs and for all that stuff. If I wanted to sort of relive the movie, mm-hmm. I'd play the soundtrack.
Okay.
Superman.
Yeah. No, there are some really good ones, most definitely.
Oh, my God. One of my favorites that'll get me every time is the soundtrack to Glory.
Yeah.
Very emotional.
Let me go next to Chris. Hey, Chris, good morning.
Good morning.
Hey.
How's it going, guys?
Going well.
Good. What'd you want to tell us, bud?
When I was younger, I didn't like music really very much at all. Like, I heard it and it was fine.
Yeah.
But I wasn't really into it. And in high school, I met a girl, and she was really into music, and she got me into music, and, like, it completely changed.
Okay.
I started, like, I don't know if any of you have ever played an instrument, but, like, when you start to play music, you start to listen to different parts of music.
Yeah.
And that kind of happened, and then I learned guitar, and that did happen again.
What was the first music she introduced you to?
Rush.
Rush! Hey. There we go.
It opened up your mind, young man.
Do we have that audio from the Goldbergs? Explaining the power of Rush.
Let me see if I can find it.
This album, now this is a completely different topic. This opened up a whole new world for me, 2112.
Yeah.
It was one of those milestone music moments in my life. You know, you have right?
Yeah, as depicted in the Goldbergs when she first hears Rush for the first time.
I listened to it, and then on the back of the album is the continued story of this particular song, and I'm like, I'm freaking out, man.
I can't take it in. My fingers are all black. And I'm freaking out.
I was freaking out. What is this? This is from the Goldbergs? All right, here we go.
You ready to step into the musical cocoon and emerge a rock and roll butterfly?
Just play it so I can be proven right.
In that moment, my sister's mind unlocked as she was ushered into a world of prog rock.
God, this is right out of my handbook. I was a few albums earlier than
this. Instant attraction, in more ways than one.
They start making out, right?
You're on school grounds. And you're in my parking spot. The windows are all down, so I know you can hear me.
Yeah, it was wild, man. I remember that being over at my friend Bobby's house. He played it for me, and I was like, I almost see in my mind a treasure chest unlocking and opening up. And I was just like,
I'm going to make out with you.
This is Bobby. I'm going to make out. Now, it's one of those milestone moments in my life, and I was
whoa.
Open about my sexuality.
Should have started with Little River Band.
Right. Oh, they're great too.
Yeah, they are. Mm-hmm.
There's a scene in Almost Famous where Zooey Deschanel looks at him and says, "Light a candle and listen to Tommy and look at this album, and it'll change your life forever." Mm-hmm. And I used to think that scene was a little cheesy, but somehow it's not. That they pull it off in a way that actually makes sense.
When especially I heard at that age, too,
yeah,
because it can affect you like that.
When I had heard the full movie soundtrack to Tommy before I had ever heard the full Who album, double album to Tommy. And but I'd heard separate songs. And when I finally did put that on, I had my Lafayette was a competing company, speakers on each side of my head pointed at my ears, laying down on the floor. And that was one of those moments where I could remember, holy F.
Yeah.
Like I felt I had just watched a great movie. And, and you almost walk around in a stupor a little bit because it's like, what the hell?
Yeah, those progressive things, man. And Tommy came out well before 2112 did. But for some reason, 2112 opened me up to the idea of the concept album.
Then
I started going back and I listened to Tommy and then, another brick or, The Wall. Oh, my God, the night I listened to Dark Side of the Moon. Mm-hmm. That was another special moment. And I was definitely in big time Captain Blackfingers at that point.
Right. In fact, it was all the way up to your elbows at that point.
Wow, man.
It looked like you had Audrey Hepburn gloves on.
Right. I was scraping that much resin.
I got a decent sound system in college. I never really had a decent radio. And I went out and I got a Macy's store card and I wasn't supposed to have a credit card, but I did it, and I bought an Iowa sound system. I was really at that time really able to hear. Remember Iowa?
Because it had the little bars that went up and down. Yeah, you can do an Iowa karaoke system too.
Yeah. So, but I was really able to appreciate all of that music that I was listening to before. The panning, and it was a Grateful Dead song called Unbroken Chain, and it was like you listen for the sound, and the sound goes from the one speaker to the other, and I was really able to hear it
appreciate it.
Yeah,
Eruption, Preston, on
oh my god,
I had a stereo that was hardwired, the speakers hardwired to a console with an A track, an AM FM radio, and a turntable, and I played this so many times.
Over and over. And it's short. It's like, this beginning part's like a minute and a half, and you could just pop it back, rewind it, and then start listening to it again. Man.
It's funny what grabs you and what sticks in your brain, though, too, because I remember driving to school with my dad and listening to the Morning Zoo with DiBella.
Yeah.
And he played in its entirety the William Tell Overture. And it was a piece of classical music on rock radio on MMR in the 80s. And it was the coolest moment. And my dad's driving me to middle school. Cool. And I'm just like, I don't know.
Maybe one day you'll be on the radio, son.
Look at me now.
Yeah. Look at that boy with black fingers. What happened
to him? That's the Lone Ranger.
That's the Lone Ranger, yeah. Right? And DeBella was just having fun one morning and, you know, and played that. But it stuck with me. And it stuck with me to this day.
Well, okay. I mean, it is funny what resonates and sticks there. And your brain goes, remember this moment.
Yeah.
This was important.
You know what? There it is. Kyle Silver.
Harking back to the days of yesteryear when John DeBella was number one in Philadelphia. So you heard this? He played the whole song?
The whole song.
Wait, what are you doing? Casey's hand boning.
You never did that?
I'm actually good at it.
I did finger blasting.
Oh, man, I was watching Family Guy yesterday, and there was a fingering joke in there with my kids. I was like, oh, no. Oh.
Well, what did you expect if you're watching Family Guy with your kids?
Well, they were doing their homework, but, you know, there's a cartoon on.
Yeah.
And they're paying attention.
Sure.
Sure.
Oh, my God, there was something inappropriate on Family Guy.
Mm-hmm. Hang on, I'm going to go to Mary, who's a music teacher. Hey, Mary, good morning.
Hey, guys, how are you?
Good, what's up, Mary?
Hey, I was an elementary music teacher for a really long time, and one of the things we talked about all the time was how, you know, the music in a movie, you could turn down the
dialogue.
Yeah, you would know kind of exactly what's going on just by the music itself.
Sure.
You know,
the great composers, and the great soundtracks do that. They are so essential to the feeling of a movie. You're exactly right. Is there any particular soundtrack that comes to mind that you feel is a great example?
Well, honestly, we did a lot of Disney movies. Stuff like that. But something that I thought was really important, too, with kids or even people, is every time there's some sort of major event going on, when you go to plan whatever's happening, people always want to plan the music. You know, what are we going to sing? What are we going to play? What's going to make this event, you know, more meaningful? And it's just totally awesome how kids get involved in this, too.
Mm-hmm. No, it does make a big difference. I would collect as many soundtrack albums as I was buying rock records when I was younger. That was really important to me.
We play, Casey, pull up some of the winning stuff that we use from movies, because sometimes when we give away a big prize, I've collected all these, Proud Bed and all that stuff.
So we got this one.
This, you know, you recognize this? You guys have heard all these, but you may not be able to place what movie they're from.
Is this from The Natural?
It is.
Yeah.
You know who the composer
is? Roy hits the home run and the lights are shattering and everything. Who is the composer?
Randy Newman.
Randy Newman. That's right. Yeah.
It's beautiful.
Then you have this one.
Girls in a Cup.
Not Two Girls in a Cup. We actually have Two Girls in a Cup.
I'll play that for you in a little bit.
No, this is from Miracle. About the U.S. hockey team, Olympic hockey team. And obviously that's when they beat the Russians, which is cool. And then I like this one. And it's from an unlikely movie that you would hear music this big and swelling from.
What is it?
It's from Tin Cup.
Oh, when he
hits that
the final shot.
Yeah, he hits makes the 12 on number 18.
Do we have the beginning of Patton?
Is this it?
Right.
Hang on a second here.
That's it. That's Patton. That's Two Girls in a Cup.
That's Two Girls in a Cup.
No, I have Patton.
That's Two Girls in a Tin Cup.
The
sequel.
Patton, the one with the trumpets?
Right.
Yeah.
So this is so perfect in the movie because Patton always thought he had been reincarnated. So this, you know, as they explained, Jerry Goldsmith, this is that, hearkening back to his past. And then the way it builds is so brilliant. Like in the distance. As a musician, you have to appreciate these things are designed to elicit different feelings and perceptions of Patton.
Yeah. All right, do I have this movie quote wrong? Is it in Major League? Because there's big swelling music and when they win that one. Is that the one where they say, the Indians win it, the Indians win it?
Yeah.
Oh, no. My God. What is that?
They say, let's play Spags.
Oh, okay.
Spags.
Yeah.
What movie?
Major League. And there's a the Indians win it. The Indians win it. Oh my God! And then the music is playing in the.
I don't remember the music being that dramatic in Major League, though.
Well, Press, you had brought up Tin Cup, which is kind of a comedy, and then to have this majestic winning music.
Yeah. I'm not sure. I'd have to go and listen to the Major League soundtrack.
Do you have Glory in there?
I do not think I have it.
That's phenomenal.
We have Blaze of Glory. We have Blaze of Glory. Let's play that instead.
Good enough.
That's it. It's about the Civil War.
Yeah.
The North faced the South. The battle for freedom.
Hang on, I'm going to go
in
to
New Jersey.
This is when he was like really hairy chested, too. Yeah.
Let me go to Scott. Hey, Scott, good morning.
Stop looking at my hair.
Good morning, guys.
Hey, good morning. What's up, man?
Hey, I know you're a huge Rush fan. I am as well, and you guys have taken great care of me. I won your Rush box set a few years ago.
Ah, cool.
Talked to Nick a few times. I'm wondering, do you guys think that Prague and Rush and bands like that that have these intense rhythms change the biology? They put us into beta, and we relax, and we start to release endorphins, and we love the music even more.
I'm all for releasing the dolphins, but I don't. I think it does.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Music puts you in a
certain pieces of music. It's not going to be Rush for everybody and prog music for everybody, but. Oh, yeah, most definitely. Yeah.
I mean, I can fall asleep to La Via Strangiata or The First Light of Hemispheres. That's not quiet music.
No.
But the rhythm of it is so relaxing to me. It's like medicine.
It's the power of music, Preston.
Yeah, man.
Oh, man.
It's the magic power of music is what it is. All right, thanks, Scott. Appreciate it. No, but I would concur with that. But there are groups of people.
Shun them.
Who do. No.
Cast them out of our villages. Send them into the woods.
We need to be inclusive. Is what we need as a country right now.
All right. We need to come together.
The people that...
even the freaks.
Yeah.
The who useless, don't like music. Flotsam and Jetsam that really muck up the works. Those who can't appreciate the things that we all enjoy. Yes, they're creatures to be loathed, but loved as well. Did I say that properly?
You did. Okay. You said it all, man. There are people that have this condition where that music just does not resonate. It doesn't do anything for them, and they don't care for it, which I was not familiar with.
But there is a biological reason for that in a lot of cases.
Well, all right, Casey, want me to play this?
Yeah, let's hear it.
Right. Say, the Indians win it! The Indians win it! Oh, my God, the Indians!
Sounds like two girls in a cup.
She did it! She did it! She crapped in both cups! She has crapped in both cups!
Oh my God, she's eating it!
She's eating it! The other one's watching! Oh my God, ladies and gentlemen! This will be one to tell the children!
Oh my God.
You ever watch that scene and notice the fat guy coming out of the stands twice?
Two girls in a cup?
Two girls in a cup?
No.
I didn't realize there was an audience.
I didn't know there was a guy.
Oh, my God. They're actually coming out of the stands to high-five the girls. You notice they're not kissing them, though. No, they're not kissing them. Oh, my God. The Indians. Out of the stands. Crap. Cups filled to the brim with crap. We've seen two champions here today.
No, but I have noticed that when Wild Thing comes out, everybody goes nuts. And then they get to the part of the song where they go, Wild Thing, I think I love you. And the girl is singing it with it, but she's out of sync with the song. I've noticed that.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah.
What else? Things we've noticed in Major League. 215-263-WMMR. No, I'm not.
Learned three things today that we probably would have been better off not learning.
What we need to do, actually, is to take a break. We'll come back in just a moment or two.
93.3 WMMR announces the next installment of our series of fan-friendly, private, and free concerts. Wednesday, June 6th, it's Pierre presents Nathaniel Ratliff and the Night Sweats. I'm gonna leave it all. Join us for this invitation-only noontime event at Ardmore Music Hall. Son of a bitch! Give me a drink! Win your way in, on the air with Pierre, or at Ticket Rates. Get details and schedule at WMMR.com. Pierre presents Nathaniel Ratliff and the Night Sweats from Ardmore Music Hall and 93.3 WMMR. Everything that rocks.
Dave Grohl was at a show in Sweden, fell at some point, broke his leg, and instead of canceling the show, he went backstage, they patched him up. The rest of the band played a few songs, and Taylor Hawkins sang. And they did some cover songs, and they were like, you know, we're not just going to quit.
They finished the shots of him sitting there with his leg up.
Yeah, they wrapped up his leg. They threw some ice on there, and he propped it up, and he sat on a chair, and he played the rest of the show.
It's like a hockey player.
Totally.
We have audio of him on his back, and then we have the video might be up on the site.
It is, yeah.
Of him on his back talking to the audience. And explaining what's going to happen.
So he's laying on the ground.
He's laying on the ground.
After breaking his leg, and he has a microphone, and he's talking to the audience. Yeah, I haven't heard this yet. Here we go.
I think I just broke my leg. No!
Yeah, he slipped. We just watched a video. He slipped off the front of the stage and went down between the barrier and the audience.
I think I really broke my leg. So look. You have my promise. Right now. That the Foo Fighters, we're going to come back and finish the show. But right now, you got to do Chevy Metal right now. You got to do it. Can you do it?
Got to do what?
Shuttle the Borble.
Oh, I couldn't make that song. Sentimental?
Marissa?
No, he was saying Chevy Metal. He was talking to Taylor Hawkins.
Oh, the cover band.
Okay.
Yeah, so what happened was he went backstage for about an hour, and Taylor Hawkins did an hour of covers.
Yeah, right. So Taylor has a cover band called Chevy Metal. So and he just made the call at the last second there. You got to do Chevy Metal right now.
It wasn't Shuttle the Borble then.
Not Shuttle the Borble.
Okay.
Which is, that's a tribute band.
It's a tribute band.
It's not a cover band.
From Detroit.
Shuttle the Borble. Shuttle the Borble?
Shuttle the Borble.
Uh-huh. Okay.
Okay. Ladies and gentlemen, let me tell you, right now, I'm going to go to the hospital. I'm going to fix my leg. But then I want to come back, and we're going to play for you again.
How awesome.
I'm so sorry.
Wow.
I'm so sorry. We're going to do it. But right now, Taylor Hawkins, you got to do it. You got to do it.
By the way, he's not even, they're still up on stage,
and
he's yelling all this stuff on the mic. You got to do it. You got to. We're getting the band back together. Yeah. Oh, you got to do it right now.
I mean, that's so rock and roll on so many levels.
I love it.
All right.
So what I wanted to throw out there is the scenario of, I broke something, but I didn't stop. I kept going.
Yeah.
My dad actually broke both of his wrists. He was playing football in the Ironman days when you would play both offense and defense for the University of Kentucky.
Jeez.
He went the entire season with two broken wrists.
Had no idea?
Are you kidding me?
No, he knew. They casted him up, but he played anyway.
Wait a second. How the hell do you do that?
Was he an offensive lineman?
Yeah, offense and defense.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, so he was,
and cheerleader.
He was a lineman. Yeah, and cheerleader.
He was a cheerleader,
for Christ's
sake. Bricker, bracker, firecracker.
So people, and there are some people that also will break something and not know it. And, you know, maybe years later, get an x-ray for one reason or another and go, oh, you know, you have a healed fracture here.
Yes.
And they never went to the doctor and got it checked out in the first place.
My dad cycles, and it wasn't a broken bone, but he fell he was riding somewhere in Montauk, and a car came a little bit too close to him, and the wind of the car knocked him over, and he had a pretty bad fall. And, like, muscles and tendons were hanging out of his arm, and he shoved it back in, wrapped it up, and continued his ride.
Oh, my God.
What the hell is that about?
Yeah. Yeah.
So he cut himself and he shoved all this tissue back up in.
He was, because we were saying, you know, you need to go to the doctor, you know, infection or whatever. He was like, it's fine. I just shoved it all back in. And we were like, shoved what back in? He was like, oh, there was stuff hanging out, like the muscle and the tendons and stuff were hanging out.
I ain't got time to bleed.
Yeah.
Wow.
But yeah. And he wrapped it up and kept going.
I mean, if you break a toe or something, there's nothing you can do about that.
Nope,
you just soldier on.
You can tape it up, but I mean, you don't even need to do it immediately.
No.
But I broke both of my wrists. You guys know that story when I was
sliding down the
banister and fell. And I knew immediately that something was wrong.
But you kept partying, did you not?
I kept on partying.
That's
dude.
Right.
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah, when did you get it?
I went to the hospital that night.
Okay.
And then that I was getting, then they gave me like temporary splints and put those on. I was going to have to go back to the doctor to get casted up, but I went back and drank my face off after that. You betcha.
I broke my wrist playing baseball, and I continued. I played the rest of the game. I went 2 for 3 with a broken wrist. And
it was
no, I swear to God, I was in college, and I had just gotten done for my summer break, so I was playing. I guess I was 18 or 19 years old or whatever, and I slid into third base and broke my wrist, and so I...
Did you slide head first?
No.
How'd you break your...
Because I got my hand cut underneath me, underneath my leg. Well, what sucks is I shouldn't even been running the third to begin with.
Because the game was over.
No, I was on second, and there was a ground ball hit to the shortstop. I had no business... going to third.
And nobody was on first?
Nobody was on first. No, because I hit a double.
Oh, you hit a double.
I hit it. It was a shot, too, in Briarcliff.
Oh, it's beautiful.
Oh, it was beautiful.
You should see it from out here.
They'll talk about this one for years to come.
Well, honestly, I think anybody would have gotten a home run with the ball that I hit, but I'm so fat and slow that I only was able to get two bases out of it. But I went 2 for 3 with a broken wrist afterwards, and then I went to the hospital that night, and I had done some damage. I had a all the way up to my shoulder.
Jeez, that's a heavy break.
Yeah.
I'm going to go to Joey. Hi, Joey. Good morning.
Bloop.
Bloop. What's up,
guys,
Joey? Good, man. How are you?
Good, thanks. Yeah, apparently when I was 15, all I did was ride my BMX bike, jump in and crash in half the time. And apparently I broke my leg. Never knew it till like 10 years later. Went to the doctor. Excuse me. Went to the doctor for a work-related injury. They took x-rays and they're like, oh, there's your problem. There's about 2 inches of extra bone that grew out of where it was broke.
So Joey, the break, it couldn't have been a fully clean break, right? I mean, was it?
No. It wasn't snapped. It wasn't you know, like my leg flapping around or anything. I guess it was, you know, maybe a hairline fracture or something.
Yeah.
And so the bone formed off of that, and that was was bothering you later on.
It, not even that. My knee bothered me because it's just above my knee, and like I feel the extra piece of bone now, and you know it stands out, and
Jesus.
You know, it doesn't cause any pain. It's just kind of weird.
Yeah, that's after, you know, it wasn't a bone injury, but when John Cougar Mellencamp, whatever the hell he goes by, he went to the doctor for that heart attack he had. They said to him, you've had about 15 heart attacks.
Yeah, that's right.
Of varying levels.
Had no idea. You just thought it was heartburn or something that. Gas. Heart attacks.
God. I guess I had a few heart attacks.
Let me see. I have Nolan. Hi, Nolan. Good morning.
Hey, how's it going, guys?
Good. What's up, buddy?
Gadzooks
to you.
I don't know if you guys have ever heard of it. It's something called Civil Air Patrol.
Civil Air Patrol? I have heard of Civil Air Patrol, yeah.
I was in Civil Air Patrol. I was at my boot camp. I was 14 years old up in Fort McGuire Air Force Base. Was on the confidence course about midweek, jumped off of one of the obstacles, thought I sprained my ankle. Here, I get back to football camp later. Again, it was summer of my freshman year. Come back, do football camp right after. The trainer, I'm always getting my ankle taped up by the trainer. Trainer finally decides to actually look at it, move it around. He's like, you broke this.
Oh.
And it was already healed. It was too far.
Yeah.
Like, my foot, it actually turns to an angle. It's not straight. Like, my ankle slightly turned.
That's weird.
Permanently?
They said the only way to fix it was I'd have to get it rebroken, and I'm 33 years old. If I did that, I'd be, you know, months of rehab and everything else.
So, like so when you does 1 foot point so far back that when you run it's always in a circle?
No, it's slightly like normally when you stand at attention in the military, you keep your feet at a 45-degree angle. Where my left foot points straight, my right foot is always at a slight angle.
Okay, I gotcha.
So I mean, I don't care. Even if it's not a clean break, you have a break that's substantial enough. I would think I haven't had anything like that. Thank God. That the pain would be so substantial that you wouldn't be able to continue.
I guess it depends on how bad the break is or where it is. My friend Dave broke his nose. And when you break your nose, you don't necessarily have to have it fixed right away. And he didn't. So he let it set. And then his breathing just got worse and worse.
Right.
So they had to go in and re-break it. And you know how they do that, right?
I've seen what they do with a little hammer.
They do. And they stick that rod up your nose.
Yeah.
And they snap it.
Yep.
And he said that pain was far worse than the original breaking of the nose. And then they got to jam all this gauze up there to
I've sprained my ankle so many times, and it is so painful. And I've heard, I don't, because I've never broken my ankle, I've heard that a sprain hurts more than a break.
Jesus.
Of the ankle. Like, you ever roll your ankle on
Oh, my
things.
God.
It
oh,
hurts
my
so bad.
God, does it hurt. It
well, as you're, so we did the mile in her shoes on Saturday.
Do you have blisters? I do.
I bought my comfort shoes from Payless, so I'm just awesome. But I saw you, and I saw that's the big thing, rolling your ankle in those things.
Yeah. Speaking of broken noses, let me go to Brian. Hey, Brian, good morning.
Hey, guys, what's the word?
Oh, you mother ever!
We already did it.
Oh, Casey. Casey only does it once a day.
You get one.
I saw us do the bird for you.
All right.
When I was in Pee Wee baseball back in the day, this was in like fifth grade, had a bad ground ball pop up, and you know how the coach tells you just to like fall on the ball.
Yeah.
Well, my face was going directly down toward the ball when it was coming directly up toward me.
Oh,
smashed my nose. Bleeding all over the place. I threw my baseball glove off, reached up, and I felt my nose, and I felt it jutting out to the right.
Ugh.
And so I decided to push it back to the left myself.
Oh, my God.
And I reset my own nose, and like 45 minutes later, the bleeding stopped, and the coach was like, all right, want to take batting practice? And I was like, yeah, sure.
Got back in there.
That's right.
Got back in, and my mom shows up. It's, you know, the days before cell phones and whatever, and my mom shows up, and she's taking one look. She took one look at me. She was like, what the hell happened?
Yeah.
I'm like, I broke my nose.
It happens.
Like, all right.
That's crazy.
Thanks, Brian.
The hospital. Thanks, coach, for calling me at home. And
right, right. Steve, I know, obviously, the scene in Rocky where, you know, the cut me, Mick thing is pretty wild, but in $1 Million Baby, when he reaches her nose and she's bleeding.
You feel that one.
Like, yeah. And he's just, nasty, man.
This is going to be unpleasant.
Yeah.
When I was...
I'm also going to give you a pap smear. What?
Okay.
Not qualified for that.
Put your feet up.
That's inappropriate.
That's right. Morgan was here. He was in the corner.
I got in a fist fight in eighth grade, and I broke my knuckle on this kid's forehead and with my right hand, and then I continued to kick his ass with my left hand.
Oh, no way.
Well, it was the girl.
No,
so wait
a
minute. So you hit, and it hurt, right then. You knew it?
Yeah.
But you didn't give up, and you went left-handed after that?
I went left-handed, and this guy today could kill me.
Yeah. Did you catch him in the face with the left hand?
I got right. Yeah, I guess so, yeah.
And you broke your knuckle?
I broke my knuckle
on his
with
right.
my right hand right on his forehead.
What happens when you break your knuckle? Do you have to get a cast?
So, yeah.
You have to get your nose rebroken.
And here's the funny thing. So I had it casted up, and the day I went to get my cast taken off, I got in another fight with him. But the great thing about the cast...
What's the matter with you?
He used to pick up my brother, so I used to...
I understand that.
Yeah. All right.
And then you went to the hospital, you got into a fight with the doctor.
You should have kept the cast on and then hit him with that.
Well, so it was great because... So it was my middle finger knuckle. So they had it casted, you know, basically up to the middle of my forearm.
Oh.
And then they had it come up to about, you know, like halfway up my index fingers. So if I bent my fingers...
You had two index fingers?
Shut up. My index finger, middle
finger.
That was
part of the injury caused the second index finger to fall.
Oh,
I'm not good at painting the picture.
Yeah,
so anyway. All right. So if I bent my index and middle fingers, I had like this little thing of cast.
So you're walking around with all four thumbs up in the air.
So anyhow,
so I had this like it was great, so I could like jab people with the front of my cast.
Yeah, you had a little weapon.
And you know what? I'm sorry. I just realized that with the broken hand, I continued to dive. I was a winter diver.
Oh my God, you were unstoppable!
Right, right.
You're like Logan. You're Wolverine.
Wait a minute. Did you wrap up your cast?
No, I just.
And was it a regular plaster cast, or by then was
it
those?
No, it was like the fiberglass cast.
Okay,
yeah.
All right.
Nice. I mean, it didn't smell great
either.
Yeah,
I was going to say, man, that'd have stunk the high hell after that.
Mm-hmm.
Let me see. I have a lot of people who apparently got hurt and then still performed Soul Man by the Blues Brothers.
I see this.
Is this a typo?
It's got to be.
Let me go. Hang on. Let me go to Sue. Hi, Sue. Good morning.
It's more common than you think.
Hi.
Hey, Sue. How you doing?
Hey, good. No, it's actually true. My son was a junior in high school, and they were doing Soul Man, the movie routine, so the whole dancing, kicking, a whole thing. And he was the Belushi character.
Mm-hmm.
First 5 seconds of the routine, he hears a pop in his foot and pain. Doesn't stop.
continues the entire routine. I didn't know anything when I was in the audience. I'm just watching, you know, I don't see any difference. He gets off the stage, apparently collapses. They bring him back to me. His foot is twice the size of normal, and he had broken his foot in, like, two places.
Wow. That's wild. Well, judging by the calls up here, Sue, Senator Coons is introducing a bill that will help people who injure themselves performing Soul Man.
Yeah, that's right.
Because there's about
there were a couple of calls up
that said, you know what? I'd rather have him injured doing Soul Man than over in Afghanistan.
Right.
Yeah. Sue, did they put a boot on him?
They did. He was in the boot for like 6 weeks.
Wow.
Right, is that the usual thing when you? Because which device will you wear the longest? Cast seems to be. Even in the most severe case, it's off in a couple weeks.
Yeah, when I had my cast on, when I broke my wrist, I had a cast on for the entire summer. So
yeah, I was 6 weeks.
It
was
6 weeks for both wrists.
I was 8 weeks.
I was 8 weeks for my cast.
What about the collarbone?
The collarbone
that was longer, right?
It has
to be.
Although most people, when they get their collarbone, when they break their collarbone, they don't do much for it. You just have to put it in a sling and stay as immobile as possible.
Do you have a head apparatus that keeps your head from tilting?
No, but I had to have surgery because my break was so bad. So they opened me up and put in plates and screws in my collarbone to put it back together. Oh. But that sucked. But I got fixed properly.
Yeah.
I feel bad for the people who break their collarbone who just have to put it in a sling because there's nothing they can do. They just have to let it set normally.
It's effed up.
Yeah. Sarah, calendar girl, Sarah, you had an injury, but you kept on going. What happened?
Yeah, so I've been snowboarding and skiing since I could walk. Like, my dad's a huge skier. And we go up to Killington every year just for
Vermont?
The week. Yeah, and go skiing and snowboarding for the week. And it was at the beginning of the day. We're going downhill, and Killington's very icy, and if you get it on a rainy week, it's, like, extremely icy. So we're going down. It's really icy, and I turned hard to make the turn, and I slipped and completely face-planted, landed on my rib, and I didn't know what happened. I just sat there, and I was just like, I can't breathe. I'm dying. This is it. This is this is the last thing I'm ever going to see. This is it. And my brother comes over, and he's like, are you all right? And I'm like, at this point, I couldn't even talk. And it was one of those things that you're like, you want to scream because it hurt so bad, but you couldn't. So it just came out as like a slight like, did you ever see that video of a turtle having sex with a shoe? That's what I sounded like afterwards.
Yeah.
It was very attractive. But so I broke my rib. And
But you didn't know it, though.
I didn't know it. And I was like, man, that really, really hurt. So I kept going throughout the day and throughout the week. And
a broken rib is formidable in the pain level. You didn't pursue it?
No. The next morning, I have a very high pain threshold.
Right.
And the next morning, I woke up and I, like, this whole one side, it just, like, it killed. It absolutely killed. And I went home. My mom's like, yep, because my mom's a nurse.
Yeah.
She was like, yep, you broke your rib. That's it. And it took forever to heal.
The rib is, anybody I know, my neighbor had four broken at once. I think it was four broken at once. Whenever you breathe, it's going to exacerbate the issue.
And I got sick like shortly afterwards, and sick with a cough.
Oh.
And it was hell. It was absolutely hell. Wow. So that was fun.
Well, how long before you felt normal? I would imagine it happens gradually, right?
No, it took months. And I work out a lot.
Yeah.
So working out was horrible. It was absolutely horrible. I couldn't. Like, I just sat on my couch and just, like, laid in a plank position because I literally couldn't do anything else. Yeah, exactly. Watched turtles having sex. So.
Nice. Ouch.
Well, I'm glad you're back.
Thank you.
Let me see. I'm going to go to Zach. Hey, Zach, good morning.
Hey, Gadzooks, guys.
Gadzooks, buddy, what's up?
All right. So, I've got a pretty good one for you. Right. My younger brother, he was, I think, 10 at the time. He was getting ready to walk to the field for his baseball game, and he dropped his water bottle. And as he was reaching for it, it was just below the back tire of my mom's car.
Yeah.
And my mom backed over his hand.
Whoa. All right.
The twisted part is he played the game.
Nice. He played with, after his hand had been run over
with a car.
Yeah. Fortunately, my brother is he's very vocal. Everyone heard him when his hand got ran over, and there was an EMT nearby. She checked him out, and he was fine. It hurt like hell, but he played an entire baseball game. He's a third baseman. So he played third base with his hand having been run over.
Whoa. That's pretty, that's, I mean, I, was, thanks, I would expect an injury to occur from having your hand run over by a car, but
think that guy was doing bong hits this morning?
Yes.
My dad, completely unrelated to breaking something and not knowing about it, although maybe he did, but he got run over by a tractor one time.
He got run over by a tractor?
Yeah, it was his family grew up in very rural Kentucky, and they had land, obviously, where they grew crops and so forth. And so he was his brother was driving the tractor. I mean, a full-size tractor. And he ran to go jump up onto it while he's driving it.
So the tractor wheel went over him?
The wheel. Now, it was in plowed ground.
Okay.
Which is softer. And it's been turned, so it's not like it was hard pan, but... it ran right over his chest.
Ooh, Jesus.
And you know those giant tread marks on the tractors?
He had it on his
bruises
chest?
Bruises across his chest from it. But he but he sunk down into the ground when it was run over. And those things weigh tons.
Oh, he should be dead.
He should be dead.
Wow.
Now, I'm assuming, I don't remember hearing whether or not he had broken ribs or not, but I would think, you know.
He got up and dusted himself off.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah. I'm
not some backwoods pussy.
Yeah, but that's...
I replaced my ribs with coat hangers. Just tied it to my spine.
Makeshift and made it. So anyhow, but yeah, you know, hats off to Grohl today.
I'm impressed, man.
You know, falls off the stage, breaks a leg, leaves, goes to hospital. Taylor Hawkins and the band did cover songs for an hour, came back and finished up the show on a chair.
Here's your comparison. The night Jimi Hendrix OD'd.
Yeah.
He had a show, blew it off.
He blew it off.
Yeah. That's a bunch of crap. What a pussy. Hey, I love, by the way, watching people fall off stages, and the footage of him falling off the stage.
It's a good one.
Great.
It's a good one.
One of my favorites is the Steven Tyler, though.
Yep.
So great.
Yeah. Edge fell off not long ago.
Edge fell off.
Yeah.
Edge fell off the edge.
Preston and Steve on 93.3 WMMR.
Now, bizarre. WMMR presents bizarre. Kristen and Steve's Bizarre File.
And the Bizarre File brought to you by Armor Metals and Recycling. In any of the construction trades, Armor Metal pays top dollar for all metals, wires, motors, and peripheries. 8300 National Highway in Pensauken, or you can call them at 856-665-5715.
Two 13-year-old girls from Vietnam spent 4 days living in an international transit lounge at Barcelona Airport before they were even noticed. The pair were stopped as they were trying to creep into the airport's Schengen area, where there are no border controls. Spanish newspaper El País said that the girls had 4 cell phones on them as well as cash. Police are understood to be focusing on the theory that they touched down in Barcelona on a stopover with an adult who may have abandoned them there.
Just left them there?
Yeah.
And I'm leaving you in Barcelona.
And they just kind of lived in the airport for a few days. The girls reportedly have offered few details about how they arrived at the airport.
That's cruel. Do they have Cinnabons there?
You know what? I would hope so.
All right.
I don't want to live in a world where there's not a Cinnabon in an airport.
Well, I sure as hell don't want to live in an airport that doesn't have one.
A Berkeley couple found dead in their home earlier this week was killed by carbon monoxide poisoning that was coming from a 3D printer.
Whoa. What?
Yeah.
I was just looking at 3D printers. I know they're tools of death.
You may want to reconsider it. A friend discovered the bodies of Roger Morash and his wife Valerie and their 2 cats on Monday afternoon in a duplex where they had been living for several years. The source was the pair using a 3D laser printer that was venting into their home. Symptoms and signs of carbon monoxide poisoning were present on their bodies. Police evacuated the building and called in teams to look for a gas leak or the hazardous materials, but nothing was found. And experts in the past have warned against the risks that come with using a 3D printer. A study completed by the Illinois Institute of Technology revealed that the printers emit particles and compounds while in use that could cause cancer and other ailments.
Man.
I'd never heard of that before.
Yeah, because now this is becoming the thing. You can do a lot of 3D printing and make all sorts of useful stuff. But yeah. Maybe I'm going to have to rethink this.
Yeah, so carbon monoxide poisoning from their 3D printer. This is wild, man. Many have marveled at the intricate details of the Arab courier attacked by lions taxidermy diorama, which is on display at the Carnegie Museum of Natural History.
Arab courier attacked by lions diorama.
Yes. And the recent CT scans that have been done have revealed a morbid secret about the 150-year-old exhibit. The mannequin slumped over the camel consists of human remains.
Is that a dude sealed up in it?
Not quite, but a complete human skull was found underneath the plaster cast.
Oh, my God.
Which officials believe may have been pulled from the catacombs of Paris. So
what
it was
about
like
the lion?
The lion, I don't know. That may be an actual taxidermied real lion. But Arab courier attacked by lions is 150 years old. It features a knife-wielding man slumped over a camel and defending himself against a now-extinct Barbary lion that is pouncing on his leg.
Jesus.
And on the ground lays a dead female lion that the traveler killed. The display is a depiction of North African culture. It was created by French taxidermist Jules Verreaux in 1867.
You remember the slogan, when your Arab courier absolutely has to be attacked overnight?
That's right. So this goes way back.
Way back.
One of the directors said the mannequin is purely a mannequin except for the skull.
Well, that's enough.
It's why the human face is as accurate as it is. And I saw a close-up of the face. It's freaky looking.
Well, I'm looking at it right here from a distance, and it still looks pretty wild. So what you're saying is that for the struggling artist, just use human remains.
That's all you got to do. Yeah.
For accuracy.
Verreaux was well known for his morbid work as he taxidermied the complete body of an African tribesman in 1830. Unfortunately, DNA testing was unable to give officials more information about where the skull may have come from.
This is like his companion piece, Egyptian UPS guy drowning in the Nile.
They said it is possible that someone could have adventured down into the catacombs of Paris where the exhibit was created and stolen one of the skulls. So that's a theory, at least.
This is a unique artist, this guy was.
Man. A ghost ship that was drifting for at least a few months perplexed beachgoers when it washed up on a Washington State island. Twitter user Ryan Clark tweeted a photo Tuesday of the large boat resting on a Whidbey Island beach after it was brought in by the tide. Joe Smiley, a representative for the State Department of Natural Resources, said officials first received reports of the boat drifting without a crew near Port Townsend a couple of months ago. The boat called Liberty was built in 1980, measures 50 feet long and 12 feet wide.
It was a pirate ship full of lepers, and we burned it. Now we're paying the price. Things will not be the same at old Whidbey Island Beach.
Officials said crews will pull the 16-ton boat off the beach during the next high tide.
That's creepy.
And it will be towed to Everett, the ship's origins.
Right there, you can hear it. There's one right on board right now. And it would have gotten away with it, too.
The ship's origins and how it came to be adrift are not clear. You know, there are loads of ghost ships out on the ocean.
So a ghost ship. You listen, is there anything creepier? I know we've all had our share of ghost ship encounters. But think about it. You know, what happened to the crew? The Mary Celeste is one of the classic ghost ships.
Yeah. But even in a modern age, there are a lot of them that are just, for one reason or another, they've been abandoned, and they're just left adrift.
The assumption is that the entire crew went in for a dip.
Right.
Yeah. And then forgot.
Yep.
I told you to stay on board.
We have a boat. And then finally, we'll do one more story. Witnesses could not explain the source of a stampede in a movie theater in Tucson on Friday night. Alyssa Sherman and Courtney Nash were a group of five friends. They went to see Split, the M. Night Shyamalan film.
Oh boy.
Courtney said, we were all kind of spooked out in the first place, you know, with the movie. And then there were some weird noises that were being made by one guy in the theater.
Did it sound like a ghost from a ghost ship?
You know what? I wasn't. I wasn't there. She said they were all sitting in the front row, and then people started running and yelling late in the movie, and all of a sudden a man yelled, duck down and run for your life.
I'm sorry, that's one of the best ads this movie could get.
So she said, we hit the deck. Witnesses told police conflicting stories, and officers never heard a firsthand report of what actually started the commotion. But there was a stampede, and nobody knows why.
The movie literally scared them out of the theater.
Yeah. Staff turned on the lights and officers cleared the theater, and the movies continued later on that night.
But, and they would have gotten away with it, too.
Yeah, so. And there you go. That's what I have in the B file for you this morning.
Now, more with Preston and Steve on 93.3 WMMR.
All right, Steve, see what you have in store for us today.
Well, during the Katy Perry concert in Brooklyn Wednesday night, Katy Perry brought two female fans up on stage so that one could propose to the other. Mm-hmm. The New York crowd cheered, applauded, and teared up while chanting for a finger blast. TMZ reporting that Harvey Weinstein took a private jet to Wickenburg, Arizona to attend a clinic for sex addiction. Weinstein reportedly went pretty Spartan, bringing only just a carry-on bag and four steamer trunks filled with whoopie pies. And finally, O.J. Simpson reportedly called Khloe Kardashian just days after being released from prison to address rumors that he is her biological father. Simpson is said to have told Chloe that he's not her father, but he's very proud of the man she's become.
Oh, dear. What's in your right hand?
It's a piece of gum.
Okay.
Yeah. I wanted to take it out so when I was reading, it wasn't going to get in the way.
You chew gum during the show?
Dude.
No, it's cool. I've never seen you as a chewing gum on air.
Well, I usually...
Or do you do it from...
I park it in the side of, up here, like
in
a
the
chipmunk.
Cheek? Yeah. Okay.
But this piece is too big.
I saw a video yesterday of hamsters, a close-up shot of a hamster shoving all that stuff in its cheeks.
Yeah.
And they actually did an x-ray of how they are able to shove so much into their mouths.
It's like Dizzy Gillespie.
It goes down into their sides.
What? Oh,
really? And they've got like this pocket in their skin, and you can see it surrounding down its torso.
Like by the ribs?
Yeah.
Oh, I would love that. I could store the breakfast pizza in there.
Totally, man.
last night, I was chewing gum. I'd forgotten I was chewing gum when I went into, you know, to bed. I'm laying down. I wake up this morning, and I'm like, oh, my God, I lost a tooth. I lost a tooth. It's a piece of gum in my mouth.
That you fell asleep
all night? All night.
I've never done that.
I lost a tooth and it turned to gum.
You saw that girl. She's a college student, plays basketball in Western Pennsylvania. She died. She choked on her gum.
Wow.
When
really?
She was sleeping.
Ooh.
Yeah.
That's
not
scary.
Not a good idea.
Then I got away with nothing.
Yeah. By the way, I found my most favoriteest gum is Icebreakers, the cube gum. Have you guys ever tried that?
No.
The cube gum, no.
Oh, my God. It's so good.
We do Icebreakers. We get those all the time.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very refreshing gum. All right. Anyway.
Okay.
We have this video.
This concludes Gum Chat.
I know, seriously.
On NPR.
But I'm chewing the Trident gum that Nick and Kathy both are.
Oh, okay. It's, four out of five. Okay. Well,
I'm moving on from the gum. Take a look at the video, and we'll put this up on PrestonandSteve.com, and we're looking at this hamster shove all these large, like, almonds in his mouth. See how it's going down by its torso?
So the almonds are literally down along the rib cage of the hamster. So
yeah, actually, right. Almost down by its pelvis. Isn't that crazy?
It's hoarding it. Is what it's doing, the selfish little bastard.
No, I know, but I mean, how it does it,
That's pretty cool.
Has
they
all
have
that room.
To do that. It's nature. It's do or die. You got to save. That's
one of the funniest things ever. We had a gazillion hamsters when I was a kid. We just would get them and they'd die and we'd get more. And we had one of them that stuffed its mouth full of that stuff and then tried to go through the habit trail. And the tube was up, okay? Yeah. So he would have been like coming up out of like a manhole. And he had put too much in his body, and we found him halfway sticking up out of that manhole, arms straight out, like Frankenstein walking, and mouth open, and you could see all the nuts and stuff, and he was just dead.
Oh, dude.
Dude, I'd seen enough of him die that it didn't really bother me at that point. We actually thought it was kind of funny. We're like, look
when
at
was
that.
This?
I don't know, man. I was a kid. I was probably like 13 or something like that. But
hamsters are
they're bred to die.
They're bred to die, but they're also they can get incredibly ornery. Mm-hmm. And then if one gets out, we had two get out. My brother had them. My older brother and one gnawed into the wall.
Oh my gosh.
And she'd be sitting there, you know, in bed.
Mm-hmm. Well, I told you, man. We have one that was. For months.
Really?
Yeah, lost. And every once in a great while, you would see him run across the carpet. There he went! And they're
gotta go.
Fast, man. Chase after it. Forget it. Go behind something, you know, a dresser that's too big to move, and gone.
We never had one as a pet.
We weren't allowed to. They were rodents.
Yeah,
my mom said rodents attract other rodents.
Yeah.
Do you know what people do like, I guess along the same line, bigger though, the chinchillas?
Oh, they're so soft.
They're expensive.
Are they?
Yeah, you go to a PetSmart, they're like a hamster you can probably get for $5, but a chinchilla is like 100.
They give them to you at the register.
Whoa. Yeah, they hand them out. Yeah,
they have a bowl full of hamsters.
Chinchillas are rarer. They got to bring them up from South America. Hamsters they probably find in the back.
Well, I was wondering where hamsters were from because I've never seen a hamster.
Hamstertonia?
I've never seen a hamster in the wild. I thought maybe they were from Europe.
I don't know. If you go on safari, you'll see them. A pride of hamsters.
Well, I had a comment, but I don't know if I want to say this because it was actually Casey's original idea, but I was just going to say we should get a studio pet. I know Casey wanted to get a dog, but maybe...
No, I didn't. That wasn't my idea.
Oh, it was Chuck's idea?
Chuck's idea.
Oh, yeah, he wanted to get a studio dog. Yeah. Maybe we get like a little studio fish.
No.
Studio fish.
Why not?
Because then you have to, unless you get...
You got to maintain the fish.
You got to maintain the tank.
Studio pet, period, is a bad idea.
Yeah. Unless
because someone will end up becoming the caretaker, and it's not going
to
be me.
How about something easy to maintain, like a bird of prey?
Yeah.
Like a falcon or a...
What if we got a studio parrot?
No, you want something cooler.
Because they're quiet.
A studio falcon.
Well, not only that.
A peregrine falcon.
By the way, Kathy, birds like that live for like 80 years.
Preston, wouldn't it not be cool if when you decide to do the stupid question, if you go, caw-caw! And then across the sea.
Comes to you, brings me the trivia question attached to its talon.
Soar!
Yeah.
Okay, what would be a good studio pet? Something that
don't want a studio pet.
Really, no fuss, no muss.
We don't. We can't have a studio pet. It'd be cruel to the pet.
I'm just saying, if we were to have one.
Rabbit? Rabbits
no.
are good. I'm answering Casey's question. I'm not saying we're going to get one. I'm just saying if we were to get one.
That would not be a good one. Not for indoors. There would be a smell and there's poop.
And raisinets all over the carpet.
No. You put them in a cage. They're great pets.
A bear. A studio bear.
Ooh, yeah, absolutely.
Steve would love that. Yeah.
Something small.
Hamsters small are from Syria, Casey.
Huh.
How about really?
Mm-hmm.
And no clue.
I didn't know they were Muslim.
Now, do you want to talk about hamsters, or do you want to move on to something else?
Move on. We're done with the hamsters.
We've got calls coming in. That's why.
Well, you know, there may be something we're missing here that may actually spur us on to purchase a large number of studio hamsters.
No. Somebody's saying get a spider.
No, hell no.
Ooh.
Now, if you're 14 years old and, that's the thing. The boys go through the rite of passage. I'm going to get a really cool. I'm going to get a snake. And then you eventually grow out of that.
By the way, Eddie Van Hamster never existed, right?
There was one that did, you know, eventually did, but he was a fictional character, and then I think
Pierre ate it, right?
Pierre, yeah. Well, that's what, and then that was the last meat he ever had.
This is it.
All right. Anyway, I can either go with hamster stories, or I have a story that I want to that I was going to bring.
Will they combine well?
No.
Well, what's the other story? Give us a hint.
There's a good chance that your spouse or live-in partner is keeping a financial secret from you.
Oh yeah, they invest in a hamster farm.
Mm-hmm.
In Syria.
Creditcards.com reports that more than 7 million Americans have a hidden bank or credit card account that their spouse or partner do not know about. So you want to talk about that or hamsters?
Well, I'll tell you right now, every single financial thing that's going on in my house is a secret from me. I honestly have no idea what's going on in our financial
So world. You're saying go with the financial over the hamsters and gerbils right now.
Okay.
All right.
We're done
all right,
with the we'll hamsters.
Thank you guys though for calling in. We appreciate it.
So anyway, according to this report by creditcards.com, more than 7 million Americans have a hidden bank credit card account, like I said. And according to the report, 4.4 million men and 2.8 million women have this financial secret. So more men hide money from their significant other than women do.
So I had it's a friend of mine, and her husband had and it wasn't like a huge secret, but he just had credit cards that she didn't know about.
This is Taffy Bomano and her husband Blennis.
Right, exactly. But he passed away, and she was left with all of this debt because it was money or debt that she didn't even know that they had.
Wow. How do you pay for credit cards without, like, I don't know how you keep track of the stuff that you're keeping track of. It's so many layers of hidden money that, like, when your paycheck comes in and goes to a bank account, how do you then hide when you end up paying a hidden credit card bill? You know, like,
unless you're the one who does all the finances.
I guess. I mean, I don't know.
Or you can, yeah, there are ways to keep it clean as far as, I know, and it'll come up as an issue. It'll cause strife in relationships where when people insist on having one separate account or whatever.
Sure.
This Christmas, you know, I wanted to purchase something for my wife, and I didn't want her to know what it was expense wise.
And what'd you do?
I said, let's go with the check because the check will come in after Christmas, And I paid for it that way because I wanted to surprise her.
I pay with cash when I want to do that kind of thing because it'll show up on the credit card statement and it'll be easily detected immediately. So, like, if you just take out however much it's going to be in cash and spend it that way, then it's easier to hide a present, which is a good reason for hiding.
Are you guys, and this is, I think this is part of this survey as well, Preston, are you guys...
spending money?
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a 1 in 5 Americans have spent $500 or more on a single purchase without the knowledge of their partners.
Do you do that?
Not really. I mean, the only thing I've ever done is grab a couple $100 and maybe go, play craps or something like that. And I keep tabs on how much money I've won or lost. And I kind of keep that to myself. But I never really go out and buy anything. I can go out and buy something expensive if I want to. I don't have to, quote unquote, ask for permission. And neither does she. I do know, though, relationships where in my wife's family where the woman in the relationship can't buy anything without permission.
I hate
first.
That. It's insulting.
It's ridiculous.
Claire, my wife, has carte blanche. I tell her, you don't ever. She knows. Well, it's she'll say it's your money. It's honey. It's our money.
But she won't go buy a car. And she's that's something you guys will talk about.
Yes, we will.
Yeah.
She would not have to tell me. I wouldn't if I came home and she had purchased a car. Hey,
you would be fine with it.
I would be because. She's not. If I came home and she perhaps purchased an airplane hanger full of marshmallows,
then maybe
I'd say yes. This was probably not a prudent purchase, but I mean, you're right, Chris. I see relationships where the guys, what is this I see, and you bought that, and it just causes strife. It's such BS.
Well, I was going to ask what the limit would be. I mean, obviously yours is a little bit higher. Well, than the airplane hanger, but you know what I mean. So like $500, I wouldn't necessarily go and say, hey, listen, I'm going to buy this for $500. But what is that limit? Over what do you then sit down and say?
Yeah, a couple $1,000, $3,000, something like that. At least I would go. I wouldn't be angry, but I'd say, wow, I wish you would have asked me about that. Maybe I could have helped you find something cheaper, you know, or something along those lines.
Yeah,
so, and I would expect the same from her.
Yeah, you know, cheaper, yeah. Like you.
Well, I had the option of spending, I'm getting window treatments done in my house, right? So I had the option of going with the more expensive hardware to hang the window treatments or go a little bit cheaper, but there was just something around it. It was a little more of a hassle to go cheaper because everything didn't match and you'd have to find matching things, all this anyway. So I had to sit down and say, okay, well, are you going to go more expensive or cheaper? And here's the hassle for going cheaper. And
you presented your case.
I presented my case and he agreed with me to go a little more expensive. So right. We normally agree.
You have a good give and take and it's not, you're not, because I know some guys who are like receipt checkers and how much, when did you get that?
Right.
And what is this about? And who wants to be second guessed? You're an adult. You're sharing your finances. It's part of the deal. You're in it together. You're a team. And that's the way it should be. But that to me would be so annoying if I was constantly checked.
Yeah. And that's practical and smart and a good approach. I know some people who took a different tack and it was they were already having some financial issues.
Yeah.
She no longer liked the two cars that they were driving. Unbeknownst to him, went out and bought two new cars.
Oh. While they still had two cars?
Yes. She traded hers in, and then when he got home from work, honey, you have to take your car in. I got us two new cars.
Wow. Yeah,
and they were having financial issues. Yeah,
without consulting him at all on any of it.
What kind of upgrade in quality of car were we talking
about? I mean, you know.
Pop up from a...
$10,000, $15,000 more, you know.
Jesus.
Yeah, they still struggle.
My father-in-law went and bought a brand new car, parked it in the driveway, got the same color, hoping that my mother-in-law wouldn't notice.
Did it work?
And she did, didn't she?
No, of course she did. Yeah. She was like, you got a new car and you didn't tell me? He was like, no, what do you mean? What are you talking about?
Same color.
Let me get some callers on the line. I got Nikki. Hi, Nikki. You're on the air. Good morning.
Hi. Good morning, guys.
Hey. What's up, Nikki?
So I have a bunch of hidden money for my husband. He's kind of a nut. He actually does all of our finances.
Mm-hmm.
And he tracks it at the end of the month in an elaborate like Excel spreadsheet with like pie charts, and so that way we know like how much of our money goes to entertainment and food or
down to the cent, huh?
Oh, he's nuts. It's nuts. It's like really, really, you know, it's really stressful. So I so rather than having to justify every penny that I spend, I have a couple $100 that I just have in cash that he doesn't know.
Nikki,
at all.
Do you go spend crazy? Are you just out of control with your?
Say that again?
Are you out of control with your spending? Are you a lunatic or is it?
No, to be honest, I really like buying people gifts. I like buying stuff for like my nephews, for my son. So not stuff that's like necessary.
I don't know, kind of just silly stuff. It's not like I buy anything all that, you know, big or elaborate or crazy. It's just I hate having to justify the fact that it made me feel good to buy someone a present.
Are you a little insulted by, I mean, does he come at you in a very accusatory way about expenditures?
No, because, I mean, well, I'm the breadwinner in the family, so, you know, money's never been an issue for me, but saving, he's phenomenal at. So he really does a lot of good for our family.
All right,
I can't complain all that much, and he's very nice about it for the most part.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it's crazy. The Excel spreadsheet is nuts.
So you have just hidden cash, or do you have a hidden account somewhere?
I have hidden cash.
Okay. All right.
Do you have a hidden husband?
Yeah, no.
Thanks, Nikki. Appreciate it. Yeah, so that's, you know, that's one of the reasons why somebody might do that. Let me go to Mark. Hi, Mark. Good morning.
Hey, what's going on?
Hey, bud. What do you want to tell us?
I had a friend of mine. He passed away a couple of years ago, and he had retired from work, and he had been out of work, retired for about a year because of his terminal illness. He was buying things here and there. What his wife didn't know is that he was racking up credit card debt. Not only was it credit card debt, but he opened the account in her name without her knowing about it. She found out about it about a month or two before he passed away. And she was just stuck, like, you know, what am I going to do? Arresting for fraud. I mean, he's dying.
Right, he's gone. And she's so what happened to her?
She's got all this debt she's got to pay off. There's no insurance for it. I mean, I would have thought he would have at least tried to get the insurance to pay for that if you're going to rack up a credit card.
Mark, I would have dug him up and punched him in the face just to wow.
I love the guy, and I found this out after the fact.
Yeah, that's not cool.
And I was like, you got to be kidding me.
Yeah, I
had no idea. So, it's sometimes just don't know.
Yeah, thanks, Mark.
Hey, if it was in his name, would she then be responsible for his debt after he passes away?
No, it was in her name.
No, I know, but I'm saying,
as a married couple.
If it was.
I believe in some cases that is the case.
Oh, you inherit debt. Yeah.
The comedic actor, Ernie Kovacs, from years ago, his wife was, he ran up all sorts of gambling debts, and she spent quite a good portion after he died of the next 20 years taking care of all that debt. Mm. So it was, you know, yeah, you do inherit it.
Doesn't the government take what's called an estate tax when somebody dies? Can't they do that with the debt as well?
Yeah, but
you're going to take
if the debt exceeds, you know, that, you're still on the hook for the debt.
I don't know. I have Amanda on the line. Hi, Amanda. Good morning.
Hey, guys. You guys rock.
Thank you, Amanda. What's going on?
Not much. Just wanted to make a comment. Years ago, probably about 15 years ago, before when you got your bank statement, they had an actual image of your check. I had a credit card just to establish credit. My husband's very anti-credit card. So I had the bill sent to my job where I do get all the mail. It's my responsibility to do the mail. So when the bill would come into my job, I would write the check out in an amount. My oldest was in daycare at the time, which I had a weekly payment for. So anytime the credit card bill came in, I would just make the checkout in the same amount as the daycare payment so that my husband wouldn't question it, and he never found out about it.
Man, that's such lengths to go to to hide something. And I mean,
well,
to this day, do you still do that?
No, you're right. You have to establish credit. You have to do that. I mean, you don't have to have to, but it's a wise thing to do.
Amanda, why was he anti-credit card?
Well, he's very, if you don't have the cash for it, then you don't need it. So.
Okay. All right.
That's how he is.
He's old school.
To this day, we don't have credit cards. So, like I said, this is my early 20s, and I was trying to explain to him that it was a necessity. I eventually told him about it only a few years ago, but this was way after the credit card was paid off. So.
Amanda, how do you get a hotel room? How do you rent a car? How do you do all those things that you kind of need a credit card for?
Well, with a debit card. That's the downfall of it, because the debit card is not as secure as a credit card.
Yeah, the debit card is actually more of a liability.
Yeah. Your account can get money can get taken right out.
You can't get that back. Because I shop online with everything with the debit card. So.
Oh, man.
Wow, you're braver than me. Thanks, Amanda. Yeah.
Is it as easy to get a credit card now as it was 10 years ago? I mean, before the credit crisis and the economy collapse and all that stuff?
I think so, because apparently you can still, like, at college campuses, you'll see their little kiosk set up, and they want to get you on the credit.
Oh, free T-shirt.
Yeah. Oh, dude, my friend Steve would sign up. We were one time, we were at Camden Yards, and they were giving out Cal Ripken Jr. bobbleheads. If you sign up for a credit card, he's like, hey, I'm going to go get one of those bobbleheads. What are you going to do? I'm going to sign up for the credit card, get the free bobblehead. I'll just cancel it later on. I was like, he did it all the time just to get the free thing.
Yeah.
Like, that's crazy.
How many
man.
Credit cards did he end up with?
I don't know. I don't know.
The thing is, you forget to cancel it.
Well, right.
Yeah. I had a friend in college did the same thing, signed up for every single one and just and never canceled, never used them, but never canceled them, but didn't realize that that would then later on show up on like a credit report or
Dude,
whatever.
My friends in college had credit cards. I never had one until after I graduated college, but we would go to the bar for wing night or whatever. They would pay for the bill with their credit card. Oh, hey, dude. Give me the cash.
Yeah.
You know?
It's a good entrepreneurial spirit.
Sure. Yeah. Sure. Especially if you don't have to pay the credit card bill.
Back in the band, we had one guy that had a credit card, and we'd be at a bar, and we would, and we'd, everybody would go, it was a Visa. So we'd go, give me a V. S. Hey, what's that spell? Oh. Come on, Jim. Come on.
Did he fall for it?
Sometimes, yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
You make us feel like he's the king. Like,
There was a guy that lived in my freshman dorm. I mean, I'm still friends with him to this day. And he had a credit card. And when the bill would show up, he would just throw it away. Wouldn't pay the minimum, wouldn't do anything. And he's my age. He's 39. He still has credit issues as a result.
Sure. Well, and you learn quickly, oh, man, I bought this great tennis racket. You know, I pay off my minimum amount, so it only cost me $480.
Right, yeah.
We had a friend who had, like, all this nice stuff, and we're like, where is she getting it from? And finally, her boyfriend told us, he was like, she thinks credit card bills are optional.
Right. Oh. Yeah, that's crazy. What my friend thought.
I'm going to go to an anonymous caller. We're talking about people hiding finances from their significant other. Hi, you're on the air. Good morning.
Good morning.
Hi. Hey, what do you want to tell us?
I wanted to say, I do the bills in the family, in our house, and my husband mentioned to me before we went on vacation one year that he was going to purchase a $40,000 truck. Well, I knew we couldn't afford it. I came back from Florida, and there was the truck. Mm. And we've been paying for that truck for almost 7 years now. Mm. It kills you. It's killing our relationship. Also, you know, it seemed kind of flippant when you were talking about just spending $500. You can't do that if you're not doing the bills. I've had that done to me and checked our balance in our account. And here a couple $100 was taken out, and I had checks out. Well, those checks bounce.
Yeah.
Now, listen.
Then the bank charges me fees for the bounced checks.
Yeah.
So we get crushed.
You know, it's just the initial the survey said was asking the question, you know, about $500. That was the amount that they picked as the amount that guys or people have purchased in and above $500, and had they did their spouse know about it?
Even $100.
Yeah.
Even 20,
yeah. It all depends on what your financial situation is. Obviously.
Yeah, we're living on the edge. So
yeah.
What it is if you know, I'm not asking you to ask me permission. You just need to let me know.
Well, we need to talk about it.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the thing.
A $40,000 truck. After you kind of expressed your issue with it,
did he need it?
No.
Not for work or anything like that?
No, because his old truck, I see his old truck cruising around town.
You can still sell that truck.
Well, we only have a few more payments. I suffered 7 years for it now.
Wow.
So yeah. I'm using it. I'm going to use it.
Yeah, that's not a good thing. And you say it's causing conflict and stress in the relationship. That's why, you know,
you
can't do that.
Yeah.
Especially, thank you.
No, all right, good luck.
Steve. Thank you.
All right, take care.
Yeah. Sometimes it's tough to differentiate want and need. You know what I mean? And that's why my wife is so good, because you know she takes care of all the bills and I'm the wanter and she's the one because you don't need that. I'm like, you know what? You're right.
Well,
you're absolutely right.
My wife does as well, and thank God she does. And she knows that I need Batman statues.
Yes, she does. Priorities are key in the Morrison relationship.
By the way, there's two new ones.
Uh-huh.
I know, they're big ones too.
They are big. I have to admit, I like those better than the Batman head.
Okay.
Those two, so
oh,
I mean,
the bust.
If I have to choose, I'm going to choose the Superman and the Batman that are in there.
You're going to be crazy about what's coming in tomorrow.
Are you serious?
No, well, it's
where is it going?
It'll go right next to Superman.
I noticed that they were pushed over a little bit, and I'm like, oh, he gave me a little more room.
Wow,
no, he didn't.
Your spatial reality is totally screwed up. No. Actually, it's that's her thing. I never want with my wife. I never want her. She's very smart with this stuff. But that whole thing of you're an adult and you have to go say, It's a good one, isn't it?
Oh, please. We're looking at it.
Steven
is toys.
Hey, you know, you justify or this or that. It just, you know, it just, it, you're, she's an adult. She handles everything. She's very, and we don't go spend crazy. We don't.
Right. But that last caller, she's right. You know, sometimes it's not about asking permission. If you're not the one who does the finances, i.e. me, you know, you probably should consult the person who does do the finances.
For sure.
Because if you're going to buy something and it's going to put you under, it's a bad idea. It's not saying, no, you're not allowed to buy that. It's like, no, you can't.
Checks are going to bounce.
Because we don't have the sufficient funds for that. I totally understand
and
that.
Being in debt sucks. Oh, and being in credit card debt is the worst kind of debt. Well, I mean, like gambling debt's probably worse. But, you know, a legitimate debt.
Debt to a hitman.
Well, that'd be bad as well. But, you know, student loan debt, it's acceptable. You know, if you have to pay college loans off, it's fine. A mortgage, for example, that is going to happen. Mm-hmm. But credit card debt, you can manage. You can control. And I'm just, my dad made sure that I never fell into real credit card debt growing up. And I'm grateful to him for that.
Yeah. Well, this study says a good portion of people are hiding a little financial secret, at least some bigger than others. But for the most part, there are 1 in 5 Americans have spent $500 or more on a single purchase without the knowledge of their partners. And also some actually have hidden accounts for one reason or another.
I wonder how many people have hidden hamsters from their spouse.
We did start talking about hamsters, didn't we?
Preston and Steve on 93.3 WMMR.